Hello and welcome to the D&D podcast, DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we talk about everything but Dungeons and Dragons. But occasionally we might talk about that too. Okay, last week I did my broadcast for DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, and of course my broadcast says, let me go back here. Okay, here we go. Today's topic, guns. D&D podcast, new time, Sunday, 7 to 8 p.m. Central, although we tend to go over that. Every podcast will be different, for we talk about everything under the sun. We have different topics, but we allow our listeners to choose the subjects. And then I give the phone number and the extension. Topics vary. Let me go ahead and give you the phone number. The phone number is 563-999-2010. Once again, that's 563-999-2010. Extension 256012. Again, 256012. So anyway, as I said, topics will vary from week to week. Topics are open to whatever our public wishes to discuss. Well, Jerry Diamond responded, every topic under the sun, but not including the sun, the distance, speed, and circuit around the flat, immovable, stationary earth, as clearly taught in scripture. All ancient cosmologies, as indicated in military operations manuals, targeting systems, USGS and UN maps, and maritime navigation systems worldwide. All topics except that one. So I told him, well, we can talk about that subject. I don't have, hang on, let me read it verbatim. We can talk about that. We don't have a problem with that. We can, you can't get mad at somebody because they don't agree or they don't believe the way you do. Not everyone is going to agree on everything. So, anyway, so we agreed to do our podcast this week on Flat Earth. But I'm not sure if he's going to show up or not. I showed up to his podcast last week. I uploaded that podcast already to the site. There's some issues with it, so I had to edit it and re-upload it. And now I'm having trouble re-uploading it, so I may have to leave the original up, but that's fine. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not sure Jerry's going to call in because he's going to want a one-way conversation where we just believe everything he says and don't question him. Don't debate him. I'm not 100% sure if that's the way he's going to be operating. And you know, but that's the way some people are when they get in these type of topics and subjects. And I've been in relationships with people like that. So it's like they want a one-way conversation. It's their way or the highway. Oh, I got a text. I was wondering what that beep was. I got a text and I got an IM or a Facebook message. Both important. So, but anyways, especially the Facebook message. But anyhow, I lost my train of thought, but that's okay. I was on a caboose anyways. So, we're not just talking about flat earth tonight. We're talking about all the different earth theories. And I don't know all of the different earth theories. Before, I used to joke around every time we would get on a subject, not with Jerry Diamond, but with David Ray and other people, I'd be like, ah, the Earth is cubed, you know, because, you know, Cube Town, right? And last Friday, I was talking to one of the girls that called in early because Jerry was late. Not really early. We were on time. Jerry was late. We was talking about Flat Earth, and I told her that I told her that I thought the Earth was cubed. And she's like, really? And she goes, I don't know if I can believe that. And I go, yeah, have you ever heard of Cube Town? And then I said, that's where I get my theory. You know? So I was joking, you know. But really, there's a cubed Earth theory. And I just found that out today. I'm like, holy cow. And so apparently the cube theory I got to look more into it, but the cube theory basis is that there's four dimensions, and we're living in one of them. Whoever's listening to this podcast is living in one of the dimensions. And then we have three other parallel universes or something or other that are in three different dimensions than our own or something like that. I'm not 100% sure how it works and how I get it, but I just uploaded a brief interview on a guy that believes in this theory, and I think it's his theory that he made up or whatever, discovered, however you want to look at it. So you can go to DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. And the cube theory is the one I just uploaded before I will be uploading this podcast. So you can check that out. And I'll have a link somewhere, hopefully in this podcast and the other one, to Jerry's podcast, because he does, most of his stuff is religion-based. Our podcast is more intellectual-based. We like to analyze and break everything down. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be cross-analyzing today. Cube theory, flat earth theory, the regular normal round earth beliefs theory, whatever you want to call it, hollow earth theory, and then expanding earth theory. And then if there's any others, so that's five: expanding, flat, regular, hollow, and cubed. Yeah, so five different earth theory concepts that we're going to be cross-analyzing today. So far I'm the only one here. And I want to read Lori's message, but I need to stay focused as to what I'm doing. Hello, and welcome to the DD&D podcast, Demented Dungeons and Dragons.com, where we talk about everything but Dungeons and Dragons. Oh, is this just a listener, or is this David Ray?
This is Jerry.
Oh, hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Good.
Pardon?
Well, I was going to turn a fan down so I can hear better.
No problem.
Since we got some rain today, we got hammered some rain, man. Not as hot.
It's raining pretty good here, too.
Oh, that's better.
So I did. You're the first one here so far, besides myself, of course.
Yeah.
But I did some research on Flat Earth, and I listened to your podcast. And there was a couple things that I picked up from that. And one of the things that you guys said was that in the Bible it talks about how it's describing how the earth is. And you guys said that it describes that it is like a piece of clay with a stamp in it. And the only thing that, you know, the main thing that resonated in my head and thing that would relate to most people was back in the medieval times where kings and queens would mail a letter. They would put a piece of wax on the letter to seal the letter, and then they put their stamp of seal in it. So you're basically saying that that's the concept of how flat Earth works.
Yeah, it's a picture of it, I guess. And I could, since you can, I can text you a, you know, like a screenshot of a famous shot of that. And there's a Pastor Dean Odle, Fire and Grace Church. He talks about the, I don't know if you've watched the Hennessy commercial that came out recently. Very bizarre, but it's a tribute to Auguste Piccard, the first guy that went up into the stratosphere, and his son, Jacques, I don't know if that's Cousteau Piccard or Piccard Cousteau or if that's him or not, but first man to descend to the deepest part of the ocean. But anyway, but at the end of it, the commercial, it's very, very interesting because it says a tribute to the flat earth community.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, pretty interesting. But that, in that video, this pastor, he has a shot of that. I mean, it's a very famous shot. I'll find it here. I can just pull it up and screenshot it again if I can't find it. But I'll text it to you. But yeah, you have he has a shot of about six or seven different seals, like you're talking about exactly, and that you know, so one of them is like a bracelet, you know, like an arm bracelet. You take it off and you put the blob of wax or the seal or the clay or whatever down, and then you mash it, and it has upturned edges, and that's what the in the Hebrew. I just looked it up today because it's I was on the phone with a guy. There it is. Ooh, I just had it. Howard Elsett, he's about 80-year-old scholar guy. He was referring to that. And so I had just looked it up because I was talking to him about it. So anyway, I got it here. If I can, I want to screenshot it again so I can send it right away. Okay. Yeah, I'll text it to you. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm looking for your email in my... there it is. Okay, never mind. I found it. I got my spam arrest guards everything, so I have to go in and authorize everything.
And that worked. Like I said, I copy and pasted it, and it copy and pasted a empty blank space after your address. That's not a real email address, and I fiddled with it, and I'm like, what the heck, and I figured that's what it was. So it worked fine after that, no problem.
Cool. I just uploaded your podcast to my server, so now I'm going to send you the link to that. I was trying to upload it on the wall so that everybody can download it, and for some reason it's not working, so I'm going to have to work on that. And so I'll just go ahead and send this to you so you'll have it, and then I can focus on later getting it on the actual site so other people can listen to it on our podcast. Hello and welcome. Okay, that must just be a listener. We have some people who's just going to call in and listen, some people who might talk. So, still waiting for David Ray. I'm not sure where he is. So back to flat. Go ahead.
Fencing and whatnot. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. So back to flat Earth.
That might be him. He just pulled in. Go ahead.
Okay. So you were saying that the Bible is saying that the Earth is like, for example, the Earth is like a wax seal that a king and queen used to put on an envelope, and they stamped their seal or their stamp into the wax to show their seal. And so the flat Earth concept is said to be, to look similar to that, correct?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that's why, you know, it's not drawn from that, but it's a good description. It is turned, and that word is in the Hebrew. It means different things, can be translated different things, overthrow, overturn. But one of them, interestingly enough, is, let me see here, to be upturned. the word upturn is very interesting because Auguste Piccard, and then this guy was a real scientist. I mean, I never heard of him until this. And the Hennessy commercial has made this guy famous. You know, that whiskey commercial is just phenomenal. It accurately shows the capsule that he built. And I didn't know why. I thought it was like a Illuminati, you know, occultic, some kind of a, you know, coded thing there because it was white on one side and black on the other. It was an aluminum capsule that was so well built that he realized he could take it down into the ocean. And so he redid it, you know, beefed it up, spiffed up the seals and stuff and descend, using it to descend into the ocean with it. But the reason it was black on one side and white on the other, or silver, it was just plain aluminum on one side, black on the other. There were fans set up, propeller blades on the outside of it, so that if it was getting too hot, they could turn it so that the aluminized side faced the sun. And if they started to freeze, they would turn the black side toward the sun. I mean, this guy thought of about everything. Nice. Apparently, at the last second, the German government insisted that they have helmets, or they wouldn't let him do the flight because they thought it was too dangerous. So they had these, they looked like big Easter baskets stuffed with towels, and the government went, okay, that's good enough. I mean, there's just some interesting things about it. One being that Jean-Luc Picard of Star Trek is named after that guy.
Okay.
The guy had a twin brother, something, I can't remember his name. Anyway, Auguste Picard and Paul or Jean or something like that. But anyway, that's who Jean-Luc Picard is named after. It was this guy, Auguste Picard, true scientist. I mean, this guy was phenomenal. Had oxygen with him. Two guys went up in that capsule. And made it back alive. I mean, they landed on a glacier, for crying out loud, in Switzerland or something. So they gave him up for dead. They were up for 90 hours. You know, they thought they were dead, and they landed on a glacier, and they were able to make it out alive. So phenomenal story. So it's made that guy famous, but the interesting thing is that he gave an interview. Of course, he was, you know, interviewed by a lot of people, but to this day, you can get online. In fact, oh, golly, I wish I would have remembered to, I'll look it up. And did you get the, I sent you a text with the seal thing. But there is a, you can look at it online. I can send you a screenshot of it, but his interview with Popular Science. Now, oddly enough, his name is August, A-U-G-U-S-T-E, and in the August issue of Popular Science, he did an interview. The magazine cost 25 cents when it first came out. Dr. Dean Odle got a copy of it on eBay for 15 bucks, and standing there while he's lecturing, he read from Popular Science, original issue, 1931, Auguste Piccard, first man to ascend to the stratosphere, and that's what that NSC commercial is. It was a tribute to him in 1931, first man to hit the stratosphere. And to his son in 1960, his son was the first man to descend to the deepest part of the ocean. And then it says tribute to the Flat Earth community. So, but his words, having gone up 50-some thousand feet, 10 miles basically, the Earth, quote-unquote, the Earth appeared as a flat disc with upturned edges. So, you know, how far could he see from where he was? You know, I don't know. But one thing is sure. As I say, this was 1931 BC. You know, and I said that, I wrote that on a thing last night on a YouTube comment section because I said, no, that's not a mistake. That's not a typo. 1931, before chemtrails. The skies are being faded out big time. You know, right. I've talked to so many people that they say that you used to be able to see farther. One guy recently said, when I was a kid, the skies were deep, deep, deep blue. And now they're fading, you know, because there's tons and tons and tons of particulates up there, barium, aluminum, you know, who knows what all. But,
yeah, David was talking about that a week or a couple weeks ago. Three things.
Yeah.
First, Okay, so what side of... Oh, I know, first, before we go there, go ahead and give your web address for our listeners to go check out if they want to learn more about this.
Okay, give a what now?
Your web address.
Yeah, okay. Who's that? James?
This is David Ray, yes. Yes,
Ray.
I called in late. I'm sorry, folks.
What's your web address,
Jerry?
You're gonna mute, and you're probably going to eat your dinner, so have at it. They're missing you.
I won't be there tonight because of this.
What's that?
I won't be there tonight because of this.
You just pulled in, though, didn't you?
No.
Oh, okay. Somebody did. Oh, okay, John. Anyway, all right. Yeah, text him, let him know if you're not going to show up. If you want to come late, let him know. Okay. My web address. Well, I have a website. It's mainly for my book, which is a booklet, but it's the main thrust of my message or whatever over the years has been, you know, get out of the cities. You know, number one rule of survival, get out of the cities. Number two, get out of the cities. Number three, get out of the cities. And that's how to get out of Babylon. And the book is the same title. To keep things simple, how to get out of Babylon. And that's really the only purpose of the website. I may let it go because it's due and I don't know. I just, you know, don't have the probably money to do it. So I may just let it drop after all these years, but I hate to do it, but whatever. And then on YouTube, I have a channel by the same address. YouTube channel name is How to Get Out of Babylon.
Okay.
Now, on my YouTube channel, as far as research and stuff, yeah, I have under, you know, you have home, then you have videos, you have playlists, and some people do playlists, some don't. Well, when I got into studying this about a year ago, I had already about 330, 40 playlists on, you know, how to, everything under prepping, under the sun, food preservation, growing, you know, building things, shelter, fire, rocket stoves, you name it, how to stack firewood, whatever. And when I, from that time, from about a year ago, I now have 235 or so, probably 240, whatever, I count them every once in a while, but playlists that are specifically dedicated to flat earth. They all start out with flat earth in capital letters, colon, and then the subtitle, subject or whatever. I will say that under those, I'm doing this all on my phone, so it's very frustrating. I can't do as much as I could do if I had a computer up and online. But given all of that, the only one that I really monitor as far as trying to keep it like absolutely the best of the best type thing is there's one called Flat Earth Top 25. And there might be 28 videos on it now or whatever, but you know, I'm going to keep that right at 25 and rotate them and clean it up. And every, you know, if I have the very best of the best of the best, it'll go in there and I'll dump something else. Everything else relates to different topics, but I just do not have the time or the capability to, you know, if I drop one in one that's on gravity and it happens to be about something else, I'm not going to go back in and fish it out. And it just takes too much time. So, but that'll give you an idea of the vast amount of information out there and the incredibly vast number of branches of science and mathematics and everything else, history, that this whole thing, you know, covers, crosses and covers and involves. So it's not a simple thing by any means. It's not simplistic. It's not something you can say, yeah, this proves it or this disproves it or this debunks it or this, you know, I'm not going to stand or fall on any one thing other
right.
than I would say
yeah,
the Bible.
It's a complicated subject and you got to do
yeah.
complicated homework. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so now the last time we actually discussed this with you online or on the podcast, David Irish was online and he asked, you know, what does it all mean? Are we like in a petri dish or something? And we didn't mean to offend you by our conversation.
You're breaking up a little.
I says, in the last time that we had the had you on the podcast, we didn't mean to offend you whenever we was talking about, you know, what does it all mean? Are we in a petri dish or something? You know, we were just trying to cross-analyze it and try to understand it. You know, so, I mean, are we in, like, a petri dish type of thing? Or, I mean, are we on one side of the planet? And what's on the other side? What's on the other flat side?
Right. Yeah, yeah. And it takes, I mean, I'll tell you what, there are so many facets of this whole thing. What do you call it? I mean, it's not an issue. It's not a topic. It's not a proof. It's a whatever the heck. Just to wrap your head around it, you know.
Yeah.
And I was faced with that initially. Let me give you a basic description of what most people see, and this is going to be verbal, and that's, you know, I think if we should be able to describe or, you know, put into words, articulate verbally, you know, what we can see, what we know, and what truth is. So I'm going to try to do that.
Okay.
First way I'd start out is that the ancient civilizations, you know, many of them, had very, very similar concepts, understanding of cosmology, the study of the construction of the world, the universe, the cosmos. And that would be, you know, the ancient Hebrews, Mayan, Egyptians, you know, Hindu, you know, a lot of the ancient civilizations, many of them, had a very similar understanding, and that is you have the heavens above, the earth beneath, and then beneath the earth, you know, Sheol, hell, the underworld, you know, whatever, below that. Now, what it all looks like, I don't know. Plato said it was a cube, you know, that the earth was a cube. Well, you know. But the idea that there's a three-part construction of the universe as we know it, the heavens above, the earth, and then below the earth. So that's, in a nutshell, that's what I would say. So, you know, there, a lot of the shots or the icons or whatever, the discs, what do you call it, the GIS, you know, grapho info, whatever that stands for, we looked it up the other day, show the Earth is like just a flat disk. And it's really, you know, there's something below it because, you know, obviously there's a huge thickness to it. The Russians have drilled down 8 miles. So that, and they for 2 years or better, I don't know what it was, they tried to drill deeper and they couldn't get below 8 miles. So there's thickness to it, no question. So it's not a flat, paper-thin, you know, disk, and it's obviously not flat in the sense of two-dimensional because you have, Mount Everest is 29,000 meters change. You know, Rockies, the Andes are high, you know, the oceans are deep, and, you know, they're about 30,000 feet. Some places, Mariana Trench is, I think, 29-something. What's the tallest mountain in the world? What's
right.
The biggest mountain in the world? What is it?
Everest.
You mean the Himalayas?
Huh?
You mean the Himalayas?
What's that? No. Hawaii.
Well, yeah, it's in the ocean floor.
Yeah. I mean, just a, you know, a little interesting thing, but from the ocean floor, right, you know, Hawaii is like two-thirds bigger than Mount Everest or something like that, because that's where the mountain starts, is the ocean floor. So anyway, not two-dimensional, but sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, a little rapid. So let me go back to the ancient civilizations. A lot of those civilizations, you know, had an understanding of the world and had an understanding of, you know, how it was constructed, and they were very similar. So is there a dome above it? A lot of them did see that. I mean, they all understood that, and not all of them, like I say, but their construction was very similar enough to see that there were stars, the sun and the moon, up in this, whatever you want to call it, upper area, dome, firmament, and that the earth was stationary and whatnot. So there are
you know, at some point, and we'll come back to it. But it's interesting to note that when you there's a lot of documents out there of whether it be a gyroscope or a new aircraft, and a lot of them will state this is for this document relates to an aircraft operating over an immovable, non-rotating, stationary, flat plane. That's the only way they work, you know. So the gyroscopes in a aircraft and whatnot. So they state very clearly in the documents. So there's NASA documents to that effect. There's you know, a lot of different documents I've seen. Like, you know, can't you know pull them up right now because sometimes I can get stuff on my phone when I'm on it, and sometimes I can't. And if I had a computer here or whatever. But anyway, so there's a lot of those documents state that. That's the understanding. So back to the terrarium, snow globe, firmament. That's a very good question. It seems to be that, I would say biblically, that's what the Bible says. There's a lot of evidence that they have indications, I would say hints and whatnot, that they did find that. The Hennessy commercial, of course, is either just massively making fun of everybody or stating the truth. You know, as a Simpsons episode where the guy, Santa pitches the ball, the guy hits it, it hits the dome, it breaks, a whale and a shark and a turtle come pouring into the stadium and it floods the stadium, you know, basically the world. Admiral Byrd allegedly fired a rocket at the firmament, knowing that it was up there, tried to break it. The rocket bounced off, was coming back down on them. They had to detonate it. I've heard somebody said they read that. But in 1958, as NASA was being created, Russia and America both fired megaton nuclear warheads directly at the firmament, at the whatever was up there, and they bounced off, you know, exploded. You can watch the footage of that. Oddly enough, okay, Admiral Byrd's expedition down to Antarctica.
That's where I was going to ask.
Right. It was named Operation High Jump because they knew it was a high jump. Number one, to get onto the ice itself because it's like 200 feet vertical cliff in a lot of places. But on Antarctica, I'm going to come back to this and back to the August Picard issue, because Antarctica, look it up on Wikipedia, ramps up fairly rapidly from the 200 feet or whatever to 2 miles. Average altitude is 2 miles. Greenland, average altitude, 2 miles. And when I first ran across that idea, I was like, what the heck? I looked at this map and I was like, I think I was sitting at the table. And I said, well, how high is this? How high is Greenland? You know, and David Ray goes, 2 miles. And I'm like, that's what this map says. Is that true? You know, yeah. I mean, it's Antarctica and Greenland stick out like a sore thumb. They're bright red on a color-coded topo map of the world. The Rockies, the Himalayas, the Himalayas, and the Indies, you know, the Rockies and the Andes and the Himalayas barely even show up. They're, you know, you don't even really see them. But Greenland and Antarctica are both bright red because they both average altitude 2 miles. So, anyway, so might as well tie that back together at this point, because if there is a ring or an edge or a circle, and if Antarctica is, I have a playlist called Flat Earth Antarctica Continent or Container, ? If it is the containment, it's 2 miles high. And there's maps that show Antarctica as having almost as much on one map landmass as the rest of the world put together, and on another one, probably more landmass, you know, square mileage. Whether those are accurate representations of the size of it or not, they're down across the entire bottom of the map, the entire length of the equator. Antarctica shows up as, you know, and it looks like it's, they look like Googler shots, you know. The terrain, you know, it's actually, you know, accurate terrain mapping, whatever. So anyway, so go back to the August Picard situation where he's up there, no chemtrails, clearer vision, the human being interpreting what he's seeing, he describes the Earth, quote unquote, as an flat disk with upturned edges. 2 miles that shows up on a map like a sore thumb would, in reality, show up like a sore thumb too, as upturned edges, which is exactly what the Hebrew says in Job 38:14. One of the translations, like I said, of that word turned is upturned. So, you know, I don't know. It's there's a lot of interesting things pointing to. Let me say this. I've come to on two issues, two subjects. What do we know? You know, what do we know for sure? And what is it we don't know? I'll be flat out. We don't know what it looks like. We don't know.
Because most people are going to be on what they know or what they think they know.
What's that?
Yeah, because most people are going to be basing things on what they know or what they think they know.
Well, what we know. Yeah, what we know. Well, I'm saying, when I say we, I'm talking about, you know, people like me from coming at this new, looking at the information that's available, looking at the proofs, looking at the, you know, massive amount of evidence coming in worldwide. There's things that we know, that I know for a fact, and there's things that, like, I'll admit, no, I don't know. How does the moon work? I don't know. But nobody else does either. You know, whoever created it, whoever made it does, if someone believes in a creator, but, you know, nobody knows exactly how the moon works. What they've been told, you know, we've been sold a lie, you know. Yeah, one thing I know is the government lies to you. Like George Carlin said.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, you know, there's a saying that says, when you know you're living in a bad age or whatever, when politicians or comedians and comedians, or you listen to the, you know, you listen to politics for comedy, and you listen to politicians to get, or comedians to get your politics, your you know, understanding of what's real, really going on in the world. You know, and that's the case with a lot of comedians. You know, they're more honest, and they're more you know, realistic than what you're going to hear from in the newspaper, the media, TV, newscast, and the government. You know, so that's definitely the case.
Kind of like that one movie where everybody wanted that one comedian to run for president, and he did. What was that? The Honorable Man or something like that? Well, okay,
yeah.
I got a question. Now, you said Admiral Berg was the one who flew to the South Pole or the Antarctica and discovered this wall. Now, I understand that Admiral Berg is the one who supposedly discovered Hollow Earth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he whether he discovered it or first one, I don't know. he did, yeah. He was one of the major ran an expedition, I think just one, to the North Pole. And then, of course, he went to the South Pole because he was, you know, the government, the military head honcho for cold weather exploration. He went to the South Pole. Now, I'm sorry. He went south. There is no south.
Okay. Well, according to Flat Earth, no south. It's, north, south, east, and west would be the north.
There is no magnetic. There is no magnetic South Pole. I mean, you have the compass points to the north, and don't point to the south. There is no. There is no magnetic South Pole. Say that. There's a little barber pole looking stupid thing, which, you know, they say is the South Pole, but whatever. Okay, so we went to Antarctica, and, you know, he came back saying, you know, there's enough coal there to power the entire world, and probably uranium, and we're going to be going back there. We're going to be doing, you know, there's land there that's larger than the United States and more fertile and more, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And those are, that interview is, you know, you can watch that on YouTube. Very weird. And he's, in one interview, he is sitting against a wall, and behind him is a map that is got to be 12-foot diameter, and it's a flat Earth map. So, you know, there's a lot of weird things like that in history and movies and stuff. I mean, 1985, the very first Back to the Future movie is flat Earth map clock in it. It just pans across to the left, and the toaster and the whole Rube Goldberg contraption comes on, the alarm clock thing. There's a flat Earth map in that. So just a lot of stuff like that. Catwoman and, you know, just different things. But back to Admiral Byrd, he said that there's coal there, there's, you know, just tons of resources. So in 1958, I think it was, as they were shooting megaton nuclear warheads at the whatever's up there, for whatever reason they did that. That's where we got, that was the bunny trail. The Admiral Byrd thing, Operation High Jump, and of course, how many planes did they have at that point in time in 1940s and 50s that could fly 2 miles high, you know, safely? The name for the American version of we're going to fire a nuclear warhead straight up in the air and explode them and try to do whatever we're trying to do was named Operation Fishbowl.
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 Fishbowl,
yep.
Fishbowl.
Interesting,
yeah.
Are we in a fishbowl? Are the fish out there outside? Or are we inside? Are we the fish? Are we the goldfish in the big alien experiment? You know, I don't know what their thinking was or what the reasoning was for naming it that, but they were firing rockets straight up to, you know, see what was going to happen. I don't know, see what rained down on them, you know? I don't know.
Right, so we're in like a terrarium. So, okay,
right.
So Admiral Byrd discovered Hollow Earth and also flew to the Antarctica and discovered the wall that surrounds us in our terrarium. So how can both theories work? Because both theories don't work together.
Well,
I support both theories.
Yeah. No. Well, I think he said flew down, but anyway, they took, you know, a lot of ships down. That operation. That's another interesting thing is that they threw that thing together like it was like, oh man, it was right after World War II. Crammed together, get down there, do this. It was a joint Russian-American operation. They were supposed to be down there for 6 to 8 months. They threw people together that didn't know what they were doing. They weren't trained in the thing they were done, you know, and they were winching, you know, picking up airplanes off of the – they couldn't get it up on skis. They had to put it on the water to take off, you know, just all kinds of weird stuff. But they left from three different places figuring that they would get to the same location from their bearings. Of course, on a globe, it should have worked. They should have been able to follow the nice lines on the globe and get there, but they ended up in three completely, like hundreds of miles apart, locations, which is an interesting point of history. I read him going out in the, you know, Hollow Earth thing. It's just maybe, you know, weird. You know, put that in. When I first ran across Flat Earth, I got to say this, you know, I was – like I said, an inveterate playlist maker. My daughter created a monster. She showed me how to do it that one day, and by 2 days later, I had about 300 playlists done, you know. But when I ran across Flat Earth, I made a playlist, and I titled it Weird Science, you know. And I stuck that in there and a few other weird, bizarre things that I ran across, and back burner type stuff. I'll come back and look at this someday, sooner or later. Well, you know, later came sooner, and I started looking at it. Because I kept running across something over and over. About the third or fourth time, I'll actually look at it and go, okay, this must be something to this. I'll at least look at it and figure it out, try to figure it out and debunk it or whatever, you know. Move on to the next thing, you know. So 250 playlists a year later, you know, no, not going to happen. But the bird thing in the North Pole, number one, it involves aliens, okay, well, you got to understand, Byrd was a Mason, you know, the whole Masonic thing, Freemasonry, you've got gatekeepers, you have controlled opposition. If you've ever read the protocols of the Illuminated Elders of Zion or Elders of Zion, you know, you will know that they state very clearly, very emphatically, very forcefully that they will always control the opposition. So,
right.
You know, Byrd was somewhat of a patsy. I mean, he was definitely a Freemason. Every astronaut is, every NASA employee is. So, the whole thing of involving, you know, quote unquote, sitting down and talking with an alien, you know, it's like, okay, well, that don't fly in my book. Maybe he may have been deceived, thinking this was some being from another planet or something. But I would say this, you know, and I've read there's so many, the North Pole and the South Pole too, you know, the North Pole, the South Pole, and the moon are the three, just anomalies or just, you know, they're out there. $64 trillion question, all three of them. What is at the North Pole? You know, what's at the South Pole, if there is one? You know, don't know. Until we have concrete evidence, some nation goes rogue from the United Nations and sends us their own footage and film and, you know, research and submarine and, you know, somebody sends something out and finds out, you know, we're not going to know. Same thing with the North Pole. Have you ever heard of the dew lines?
I have not.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing. It was a massive operation. It's a distant early warning lines, DEW, distant early warning, and it was just this just mind-boggling, huge emplacement of radar, supposedly for you know, early warning against missile attack and blah 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 blah, all the way across Canada, some of them in America, Alaska, of course, and whatnot. But you know, who really knows what is at the North Pole? I mean, I don't even want to, you know, go into anything that I've read about it because it's all so weird. You know, I used to say I'm a polymath because that's one guy, you know, they say, oh, you're a polymath. You know, well, you know, I met a guy that maybe might have been a polymath. Maybe he was a lot smarter than me, a lot more educated, and actually had some real education, whereas I don't, you know. And he on his card, he said, you know, scientist, poet, mathematician, you know, astronomer, chemist, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, I'm a modern Leonardo da Vinci. Well, okay, well, I'm not a polymath, you know. Well, I'm polymathic. I'll just use the adjective. You know, I read stuff really widely, and some things click, and the little things, you know, you read something from a science fiction book, and it makes sense, and you read something from an ancient history book, and that makes sense, and, you know, all of a sudden these little, oh, damn, I remember reading that about such and such, and, oh, you know, you get a picture. So North Pole, weird few things are, in fact, Bill brought it up tonight, totally unrelated. I don't know what it was that brought it up, but Mastodons, you know, being frozen and whatnot. You know, okay, I've heard about that repeatedly. You know, some old lady gets investigated, the KGB sends somebody up because they get reports of everybody else is real hungry, and this lady's serving steaks in a restaurant in Siberia. And they come to find out there's a, you know, it's cold up there, and there's a mastodon hanging in the freezer. You know, and she's just slicing up, you know, steaks and grilling for people. And you've heard about that. I'm sure people have heard about that. You know, they still got the green stuff hanging out of their mouth. Well, that's proof of the Noah's flood, blah, blah, blah. Well, it might be proof that they just popped up out of the inside of the earth, too, you know. But another weird thing I heard was that Russia sends expedition ships up into all of the northern rivers going up that empty out into the Arctic Circle, you know, looking for those things. You know, massive, there ain't anything frozen in the water, you know. So I don't know. There's a lot of weird things about that, and the Hollow Earth thing is not necessarily unbelievable, and it doesn't necessarily, you know, negate a flat Earth, because there could be a filtration system. You know, you pick your, what are them things called? I'll think of them in a lens, a pool, you know, in the middle of a pond, you have a drain thing. You know, in a lot of big lakes, they have a drain tube. David Ray knows what they are. You do a series of them, and a little, you know, you got a float, a drain from this pond into that pond into that pond. And, you know, there may very well be a big, you know, opening up there. I mean, there's satellite shots that look like they're real, or from a high altitude plane, you know, a big open area. So, you know, we don't know. Until somebody, until the government really comes up with it, they're the ones with all the power, they're the ones with all the equipment, the scientific, the telescopes, the, you know, cameras and blah, 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 you know, until something like that really comes out, we're not going to know. So.
Right. Well, according to my research on Hollow Earth, they don't necessarily believe that they are the people inside the Earth or aliens. They're just more advanced beings from our past because they went underground and developed a peaceful whatever where we stayed above ground and fought and tried to destroy each other. And so we degressed and they progressed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so. I mean, I would, I guess, the only point I would make there is that I would say that, you know, they don't necessarily cancel each other out because you're not talking flat, two dimensional, nothing. Like I said, Rush has gone down 8 miles. You know, I don't know. That whole thing is just it just seems impossible. But then, who knows? You know, and you have the dimensional thing too. You know, out of time or different. You know, different. You know, parallel worlds, you know. I mean, I'm not going to say the whole thing. I'm not going to make a decision. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, well, this is true and you're wrong and I'm right and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean,
we don't want to do a, you know, point and finger thing. We're, you know, we like to cross-analyze everything. That's kind of what we do with, you know, David Ray and I and David Irish, too. We like to cross-analyze everything, pick it apart,
yeah.
See how it ticks, and so that's what, you know, that's what we do, and that's
right.
Basically
right.
What we're doing here. I mean, you know, like, you was talking about dimensions, parallel universes. I before I used to joke around and say the Earth was cubed, you know, because of Cube Town, the cartoon, you know, that's where I got my theory. It's just a joke, right? But today I discovered there is actually a cubed Earth theory where we actually have four dimensions that we are living in a cubed Earth. And I didn't go into that, but basically they believe in a four-dimensional cubed Earth world.
Yeah.
Which is kind of...
There's a lot of stuff about the black cube, Saturn cube, and, you know, yeah, dimensions. I don't know. The you said something there, though, that was cartoon cube.
Oh, Cube Town, it's a cartoon. It was, you know, just something funny, you know, because I like to be funny. But, you know, looks aren't everything, so...
Oh, I know. I know what that triggered. What that triggered was, I don't know the name of the movie, but it is Matrix guy, Keanu Reeves. And it's about, he's a demon hunter or a fighter or something like that. But multiple times in that movie, he makes a statement, we've never had one come through onto this plane. So, you know, I believe that there are interdimensional beings, i.e., you know, fallen angels, whatever you want to call them, Nephilim, whatnot, and that there are dimensions, you know, parallel, whatever you want to call it, parallel world, parallel dimension. There's a lot of things out there that we don't know. And that's what I say, you know, what do we know and what do we not know? And that's one thing we don't know for sure. But I would say that, yeah, there are very, very, very clearly, you know, extra-dimensional beings that can manifest in this plane, on this plane. And they use that word, you know, multiple times in that movie. We've never had one get onto this plane before, one of the big, 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 really big, really bad guys, you know. Never made on just a little guys live here, you know. Which is an interesting thing, too, about the firmament idea is that, you know, people believe that, you know, it's a, in a sense, a prison for the fallen beings, and they're here with us human beings, and that's why we have all these problems, you know, the Watchers in the Book of Enoch, and a couple of the apocryphal books, not Jasher, Esdras, you know, Jasher and Enoch and another one talk about, you know, the Watchers, you know, the fallen angels, what was supposed to be their job was to watch over us. But some of them fell.
Why would God punish us by sticking the fallen angels and such here with us? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, from a Christian theology, just looking at Genesis, you know, this is an interesting thing that people, you know, even as Christians, you know, it says that God created the heavens and the earth was not form and void, but on the first day of creation, he said, let there be light. Second day of creation, you know, created the
family. Oh, yeah, I was going to look that up. Go ahead.
Yeah, third day. The point being is the earth was already created, but I'm getting to the point here, the punchline. Third day, grasses and, you know, waters, separated the waters from the land, and, you know, things grew and blah, 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 blah. Fourth day, created the sun and the moon. Greater light to rule the day, lesser light to rule the night. And then, you know, it goes from there, right? But
right.
Point being is that when Adam was created and Eve and he's up there in the garden, right? What's
right.
The first thing that happens? The serpent shows up. So, you know, point being is that the angels had already had the war in heaven. They had already fallen. And so we were starting off with, you know, I'm going to say three strikes against us. But,
the cards already stacked against us.
Yeah, that's it. The cards were stacked. The house was, you know, it was what do you call it, a crooked house, you know. It was... The deck was stacked against it.
That's unfair from a just God.
Well, anyway, Adam fell. Well, it was a choice. You know, Adam could have said, nah, you know, hey, the woman could have gone to Adam. He could have gone to Adam and said, hey, this thing over here wants me to eat this apple, quote unquote, you know, or this fruit, you know, it's not necessarily an apple, but no, don't do that. So it wouldn't have fallen, and the serpent would have got, the enemy would have gotten booted, and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know.
Right. Teamwork.
But interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Team makes a dream work, and they didn't work as a team.
Yeah.
She did what she did, and then she went and did what she did again to him, and they both failed together instead of working together to solve a problem, which is what we have the same problem today. You know, people don't work together.
Yeah.
To solve problems.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's difficult, you know. It is. It's been great. I mean, really, you know, as odd as our crazy situation is, you know, mine and David Ray's, you know, we're getting a lot done here, you know, with Bill's drive and money and, you know, and you, I mean, I thought about that actually earlier tonight. I thought, you know, I mean, you know, David Ray and you know, you're out working and driving. You're a real person in the real world, you know, and Bill's doing that, you know, and
yeah.
I'm like his sidekick and, you know, I mean, it you have to have that, you know.
Oh,
but anyway.
My main operation manager that are working on our project, and I'm financing it for the most part. And somebody's got
to. Can you hear me now?
Somebody's got to wait until it can finance itself. But that's my retirement plan. But back to the Earth.
I've been commenting all along, and I found out my phone was on mute.
Oh, okay.
Idiot!
Always a kid.
Okay, so you was talking about, okay, we on the cube subject, you said something about cube Saturn, but with flat Earth, the flat Earth theory, or whatever you want to call it, they don't believe that there are any other planets out there, that's a myth.
That there are what?
But there's not any other planets out there, according to flat Earth believers, that there are no other planets out there, that the other planets and all that.
Meaning that they would support life?
Anything. That's what I heard the other day on your podcast. You said that there is no outer space. There is no other planets.
Well, you can clearly see them.
Right. Well, planets in a sense of, you know, outer space, meaning the construct of the universe that we're told is that there's, you know, and I grew up believing this. I mean, I was a little kid. I started reading the science. I worshipped science. I knew all this stuff. I could calculate the number of habitable planets that had to be out there just based on the one third of 1%, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's all a construct, you know, it's a myth. And I'm just saying planets in the sense of habitable planets that are out there that, you know, alien species could be, you know, have grown up on. And that's been, we have been brainwashed into believing that from the earliest cartoons, okay, and from the earliest, you know, Hollywood movies, or not even Hollywood, French, you know, and everything else. We've been told that. But there, you know, like just last week, the Kepler telescope found 1,284 habitable planets. Oh boy, they're under the gun, aren't they? NASA is absolutely being destroyed worldwide. I mean, they are being dismantled. They're being ripped new, you know, rear end holes daily because people are showing how stupid it is. Their whole construct, the ISS, and you know, all that stuff is just completely bogus. Kepler. Telescope, the gout, the whatever that other thing, the Hubble telescope, you know. But habitable planets is what I would say. We've been sold this bill of goods that there could be, probably are, other species out there. Now, let me back up a few decades to go back to Wernher von Braun. Okay, Operation Paperclip, you know, about 1,500 or better Nazi scientists. We split the Nazi scientists between Russia and America. I pity the ones that went to Russia, but we got probably the bigger bulk of them. Wernher von Braun was put in charge of the, can't remember the initial space center, but basically he was the guy that was the brains and the operation operative, you know, a lot of it behind NASA. Basically the head. The first thing he did, first thing, why you explain this to me. The first thing he did as the head of American space program was to go to Antarctica. What the hell does space got to do with Antarctica? Well, NASA and Antarctica are tied together like, you know, two peas in a pod or two, whatever you want to call them. You know, Siamese twins.
Hello, who are you?
Howard here. How are you doing? I just got back from my walk, so I thought I'd join in to see what's going on.
Oh, my word. Okay. Well, I'll talk for a little bit, but then this is, his name's Howard Elseth. Correct me if I'm wrong. But this guy is,
I was joined, I shouldn't have said anything.
Oh, come on. Okay, well, you pipe in anytime you want. Yeah, he's this guy's a scholar. He's amazing. I want to go down and look. I'd like to go down and spend a couple of months with him. He's got a museum down there, and just is in Texas.
Oh, don't say.
But okay, so money trail. Okay, let me finish what I was saying, and then it's something else. If you want to pipe in here, Howard, just go ahead.
Okay.
Then I want to learn. Well, we should touch on the couple of the verses earlier that we talked about. Okay. NASA Antarctica. Okay, so the first thing von Braun does is go to Antarctica. Why in the world did he do that? Well, maybe because they knew they could actually see the firmament, and you know that's where Byrd had supposedly fired a missile straight up in the air, and it bounced off, was coming right back down at him, and they had to detonate it, bounced off of something, and they supposedly launched planes hitting this thing that they couldn't see. Don't know. But the thing is, I didn't finish that earlier. Russia and America, joint expedition, left from three different places, got to three different places. They thought they could give them the same coordinates and get to the same location. They did not. They were hundreds of miles apart because the southern, whatever you want to call it, hemisflat.
Hemisflat. Right.
Yeah, it's bigger, you know. Annalena Froomsat, the sun, the figure eight sun thing that you take pictures of. Anyway. So anyway, they were supposed to, the length of the expedition was proposed 6 to 8 months. They came back in 6 weeks and basically dragging their tail behind their legs. So so von Braun goes to Antarctica for whatever reason. Now, after his whole career of doing whatever he did in life, Apollo space mission and, you know, all the Gemini, the Mercury operations, von Braun. You know, it was his designs, his rocketry, his genius. He instructs his wife and you can pull it up on the online on his gravestone. It has his date of birth, date of death, and one other thing. Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. And I was saying, if I'm repeating myself, tell me, but Citizen Kane, the movie by Orson Welles, did I talk about that yet? No, I didn't. Okay.
On this podcast. No, on your podcast you did.
But... Yeah. Okay. Citizen Kane, the movie by Orson Welles, he had complete control over that movie. The reason was it was financed by William Randolph Hearst, and he was, you know, it was just shoved forward. It was done deal. And the theory is, that movie was done by Hearst as a coded claim to fame that he and it was a British nobleman, Sir blah 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 Hubert. It was a really weird name.
Humphrey.
Hubert Humphrey. Weirder than that. It's not a name I've ever heard but once in my life. Wilkins is the last name. I don't remember the first name, but Wilkins, Hearst and Wilkins, were the first ones to reach the firmament in Antarctica. They did an Antarctic expedition, and that movie was his claim that he reached the firmament, and Kane dies and drops, I remember just seeing the splash in my mind, a snow globe in his hand, a glass-domed terrarium. So he has that in his hand as he dies, and or it's a grave scene or something, it's a cemetery scene. And Kane, K-A-N-E, spelled backwards, is E-N-A-K, like Enoch, the Book of Enoch. Now, this week I read a phenomenal article about the fact that Enoch, the Book of Enoch, was not just lost or not just like it wasn't put in the Bible, and maybe it should have been, but it was suppressed. And, I mean, this shows... points that the only one single solitary place in the Old Testament is a certain phraseology used, son of man. It's used like 80 times in the Book of Enoch and something like 79 or 80 times in the New Testament. And there's another phraseology, oh gosh, what is it? Help me out, Howard, if you can. Another word in there that's in the book. Basically, the point was between these two phrases, the other one is only used only one time by one writer in the Old Testament, and that's by Daniel, both of them by Daniel. Only uses the entire Old Testament, and yet the New Testament is full of this phraseology. I'll maybe think of it in a minute. One of them is the Son of Man. You know, Jesus used that time like 70 times in the Gospels. I am the Son of Man, saith, you know. Either the New Testament writers were drawing on something that they consider scripture, i.e. the Book of Enoch, or they're both completely bogus or something like that. You only got about two choices here. Point being, the Book of Enoch has been massively suppressed. It wasn't just not put into the canon. It was massively suppressed. The reason is because it talks about the watchers, talks about the construction of the universe, talks about the heavens and the earth below and the, you know, underworld and the courses of the sun and the moon, and Howard can, you know, pitch in on that if he wants, but the Apocrypha. Now, I want to say this. Howard has studied the 1611 version of the King James Bible for, I don't know, decades. I mean, literally decades. And I heard him speak years ago, and I got a copy of it, and it's not around right now. But he has just done a phenomenal amount of research there. I got his book finally, the companion version, or you know, it's like it explains the reasoning and the, you know, why he knows what he does about it. But why is the Apocrypha not in the King? Why is it not in the Bibles anymore? Because a lot of it, look at Ezra, we were just reading, he read me a passage earlier from Ezra that is just, I mean, like, wow, mind-boggling. And I don't know if I can pull it up here. I might be able to. I might. Oh, my phone. Why did it do that? It dumped everything. And I probably can't pull it up.
I think that's what got me studying the lost books of the Bible, because my first wife and I, we got into Catholicism for multiple different reasons. But we got into Catholicism, and when we were at the Catholic Church and we got a Catholic Bible, it had 7 books that the Protestant Bible didn't have. And I was like, whoa, what's up with this? Is that how many books are in the Apocrypha, 7 books?
Well, there's 14 and 15. The reason why it's 14 and 15 is the spiritual tabernacle has a numerical value of 14. The physical has a numerical value of 15. Lord Jesus Christ has 15 letters in his name. And that one book is Baruch, which has both the book of Baruch and a letter from Jeremiah. So you can look at it as 2 books or 1 single book. But the Apocrypha represents, the Catholic version is a kind of a counterfeit of the Protestant Apocrypha. The first Bible, Protestant Bibles, had the Apocrypha, and the Catholics copied it. And now most people consider the Apocrypha Catholic. The Apocrypha is the sanctuary of the Bible. It represents Jerusalem. It represents the bride. It represents the flesh. And so you and I are Apocrypha. Jesus was an Apocrypha that needs to be filled with the golden oil of the Old and New Testament. It's not a covenant. It's not a testament. It's a Levitical bridge between the two. Does that make sense? And it's kind of like the sanctuary. You go into the sanctuary to meet with God and to learn what God is doing in the world. And so that's what the Apocrypha represents. And so
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That also explains why they're trying to get... Okay.
One of the reasons they're trying to get it, governments don't like it, is because it says over and over again that if you have anything to do with the church, whether you're a singer, a preacher, a teacher, a leader, whatever you have to do, you and your property cannot be taxed. And they followed that in the early days of American history. That's why there was no tax, personal income tax, for many, many years until they got the Federal Reserve. And, of course, you probably all know the history of the taxation. But that's one of the things to... understanding also a lot about the earth and the boundaries of the earth, such as 2 Edris 6:1 and so forth. And it talks about the sky being a vault in the Apocrypha, 2 Edris 16:59, I believe it is. And so there's many things in the Apocrypha that help us understand what's going on this earth. And,
right.
And I want you to know that, because you'll see, your mind will start waking up in your heart if you read the Apocrypha several times over. You begin to understand the whole concept of wisdom and how things are developed. He says, "I do everything by measure, by number, and by weight." And it's foreign to a lot of people to understanding the idea how everything is numbered.
Yeah, that makes sense, because ever since then, I was trying to make sense of everything. You know, and lately I've been complaining, you know, because everybody, it seems like the churches, the New World Order, whatever however direction you want to go, it seems like they're trying to phase out the Old Testament. Well, since they've already phased out the Apocrypha, which is supposed to be the bridge between the two, it makes it easier for them to get rid of the Old Testament.
But
because, like,
also notice it's in the midst of the Bible, and that's very important. It's in the midst. You know, Jesus was crucified in the midst, and the Apocrypha is also looked at as the birth chamber of the Bible. It's the female part of the Bible. women want to rise up and get angry about something. They're all worried about getting the right to vote and all that, which probably doesn't amount to much anyway, any of our votes.
Not anymore.
Never did.
Well, Princeton University just recently did a study. Princeton, I think Northwestern also was involved. Does our vote have any effect on federal policy? And that was the debate. And they both came to the conclusion that your vote has zero effect on federal policy. And Jimmy Carter chimed in and said, well, former president, he said, this isn't even a democracy. He didn't even recognize it as a republic, but it's no longer a democracy. It's an oligarchy, which means it's controlled by a few rich folk here and there. So, but be that as may, whatever it is.
But he said that?
Pardon? Yeah, he said that. Jimmy Carter said that. But the thing is, it's interesting that the Apocrypha is in the midst, and we've all heard of the Tree of Life, and it also represents paradise, between the bridge between the two, and it represents the Tree of Life. You know, we have our earthly parents as our physical Tree of Life, and then we have Abraham and Sarah. Look to Abraham, your father, and Sarah, the mother that bear you. And then your next Tree of Life, of course, your ultimate, is your Heavenly Father and wisdom. To represent this on the earth, to represent the go-between between the two covenants. The old covenant represents the Father, the new covenant represents the Son, and the working of the Holy Ghost. But in the midst of all this is that Tree of Life where we eat and we feast and we grow, and that's called the Apocrypha. It's the house of God in the midst of the mountains of Jerusalem. Jerusalem means two. It means dual. It means a place to be taught and a place to learn. And then it's Yara, which is dual, and Shalom, which is peace or safety or restoration, renewal. So you have this place of safety. And so if you look in the fourth chapter of Joel, which you can't find in any Bible except the 1611, is the only Bible on earth that I know of that has the fourth chapter of Joel. And it's hidden in the middle of the book of Micah. And it tells about heaven coming down and sitting on top of the mountains. It's speaking of the Apocrypha sitting in the top of the mountains as the house of God, a place where we can be taught. And so it's very, very, a Bible, see, a Bible without an Apocrypha is just a version of the Bible. It may even be a perversion of the Bible. But there is only one Bible. There's only one last will and testament. That's my belief. It's the 1611. And the number 1611 is encrypted in it. I've found it over 40,000 times so far. So I better shut up here. I'll start talking. I can't to get in here to listen.
It's all good. Okay, so back to flat earth. Because we talk about anything and everything, you know.
Okay.
Our thing is, you know, our podcast is called Demented Dungeons and Dragons, and we talk about everything but Dungeons and Dragons.
No, we talk about that too.
Once in Blue Moon, yeah, but it's boring.
It is.
So back
who
to
who else
flat
is on this telephone call? They said there are five on here?
There's seven so far.
Seven, okay. Where are y'all from? I shouldn't. I'll probably just shut up and listen because this is your guys' thing. I'm just here to jump in. A friend here told me to. Jerry said give a call in, so I had a little time.
It's a conversation, and we don't exactly want our callers to be silent, but it's all right. I mean, I'm one of the hosts, and I'm silent most of the time, so.
Most of the time, not.
Yeah, depends if it's just us. Today, I was mostly on mute. But, yeah, we want to hear from you. It's a conversation.
Yeah. We got 8 callers now. Yeah. Well, one's online, and the other 7 are on the phone. So we got 1 listener and 7 callers. Cool. Okay, so I'm not recognizing some of the area codes, but basically David, Jerry, and I are from Missouri. One of the area codes is 936, wherever that's from, and then the other one is 928, wherever that's from. So,
okay.
And I think I know who the online caller or listener is, and she is from Missouri also. So anyways, so back to flat earth and et cetera. Oh, the 936 number, that must be you. Yeah, that's you.
That's probably me, yeah, 936.
Yeah, 936, yeah, that's Howard.
Holy Bible Mini next to your name. Okay, so... Okay. So anyway,
okay. Well, let me just.
Flat earth.
Yeah.
I have a question.
You what?
I have a question.
Okay. I have a question. Go ahead.
Okay. In your text, you were saying that there was military manuals and. Computerized, weaponry, and et cetera, that proves the theory of flat earth. And I grew up in the military, so I contacted my father asking him about that. And my second wife was in the military, so I have a lot of military friends. And so I consulted a few of them about that, and they say nay. They says that doesn't make any sense to them. Why does that disagree?
Can you kind of try to speak, keep your mouth by the phone or whatever?
Okay, how about this?
That's much better.
Okay, sorry, I'm on my hands-free kit, so you know.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
I will repeat. In your text, you said that including military operations manuals, targeting systems, USGS, and UN maps, and maritime navigational systems worldwide back up the concept of flat Earth. Now, I grew up in...
That wouldn't be my experience.
Right. David was in the military. I grew up in the military, so I asked my father about it. My second wife was in the military, and so I have a lot of military friends. And I asked them, well, not all of them, but a few of them about it, and none of them agreed. So how does it back up the concept of flat Earth? Because we don't understand.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the insignias or the, whatever you call them, emblems, motifs or whatever. There's multiple of these online. I like I said, if I had another, you know, I can text it to you a video or screenshots, but there's multiple maritime. I'm mainly talking about maritime organizations. You go to the bulkhead of the ship, and there's a flat Earth map there. There's, you know, when I have time, I can give you the names of them all. But that's just a fact. I mean, it's not an empty statement. They all have that some form of the flat Earth map on their insignias. So now you're definitely talking Navy, and I know David was Navy. I don't know what branch you were. But
a while back, everybody had insignias with only America showing on a globe. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Say that again.
Well, up until the late 60s, everybody had an insignia or their symbol of the Earth was a globe with only America's showing, you know, North America and South America, as if Russia and China didn't exist.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was understood they were just on the other side of the planet. You know, it's just we're showing our side. You know? Just because they show a picture like that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how they believe the world is exactly.
Right, yeah. So.
All right. I can pull up a map that shows Antarctica as the center. You know?
Yeah, you can make a great circle map. I mean, ham radio operators use flat earth maps to direct their antennas. They use what they call it a great circle map, but it's a flat configuration to aim antennas. If you want to aim from Paris to Moscow, you use a flat earth map. So the word is azimuthal equidistant, and it's one type of projection of a map. So, but yeah, that point was just that the maritime organizations have that, you know, as a emblem, insignia, whatnot. So yeah, that's not a standard fall thing. It's just an interesting point, fact, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, I'm not trying to debunk you or anything. I'm just trying to.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, you know, say crest and cross examine and whatnot. Yeah. Do these people know? Like I said, you know, there's Admiral Byrd sitting there on a TV interview. Sitting in front of a wall size, I mean like a 12-foot, 15, 20-foot diameter flat earth map. The interesting thing that came out recently, and this is fairly recent, in Sydney, Australia, there's a place called Darling Park, and there's like a 30-foot diameter flat earth fountain. It's in the middle of a garden, an outdoor park garden that's configured like a Moloch owl. There's a big flat earth clock on the wall in some building, about 5-6 foot diameter. So, I mean, there's things like that. That's not a standard fault proof, but do they understand the reality of what the earth really looks like? And I think that's all. It's a point in the support of the idea. So yeah, whatever. The Darling Park fountain is, you know, has this upturned edge all the way around it, you know. So just a, you know, case in point possibly. If you want to talk about military, you have you know, guidance systems, missile operation system guys that have been interviewed, and yeah, we can paint a target at 60 miles, 100 miles, whatever, you know, with a 2-inch beam. Is that possible on a curved surface? There's multiple, you know, things like that that, you know, come into play. One of the latest things is, and I haven't, this really weird, there's a, the things that I would think would be a lot more information about, Japan fired a laser, green laser, we'll come back to that later, but 2-petawatt laser, I would think that there would be more information out about that, but it's slim. It's slim pickings. It's like, you know, finding hen's teeth, as they say. That was July 31st, 2015. We'll come back to that later. But my point is, another thing that has happened recently that there's not a lot of information on is the, and this is fairly recent, but the Navy's railgun. I mean, when they're talking about that thing, you know, they say, well, if normal warheads, we can fit, we could only stock about 100 of these on a ship. And with these things, we could have 1,000 or 2,000, I don't know what the number is, 2,000 or 3,000 of them, because all it is a little metal 3-foot-long missile. And they can see and hit a target at 100 to 120 miles with it. So that's an interesting fact that they've given out. The thing is not laser guided. It's not, doesn't have a gyroscope in it. It's not heat seeking. It's not wire guided. There's no guidance whatsoever. It's just see it, pull the trigger, hit it. It's a Mach 7 times 8, 56 at the 5,600 miles an hour. It's just a little electronically, you know, electromagnetically fired projectile with, you know, a really sharp point, and it's about 3 feet long, and then they cost, maybe they cost $1 million a piece, but it's a lot cheaper than a $50 million warhead or whatever it is that they usually fire. So point being is at 100 miles, something that is not guided, you can do the math on that really quick. 100 miles would be it should be 66, what is it?
Be about a tenth of a degree.
6,000 feet. Oh, no, that's right. Hang on. Take my time. 100 times 100 equals, okay, 6,000 times. Yeah, it should be 6,666 feet below their line of sight. They're saying they can see it and hit it at 100 miles. Flat shooting. Now, maybe there's some drops to it. Maybe they can figure that in computer-wise. Don't know. So that's kind of an open-ended deal, because I understand ballistics. I used to have ballistics tables memorized. You know, point-blank range means that with a 30-06, a hot 30-06, you know, you've got about a 300 and whatever. You know, it'll hit anywhere 5 inches high between here and 100 and, let's say, 70 yards, probably more like 200 yards, and it'll drop fairly rapidly after that. So this thing could be figuring that. It may have a ballistics that it's a point-blank range is 75 miles. So it's rising that first 75 miles and dropping, but they're saying they can hit a target precisely at 100 miles. Like, they know where the magazine is on that ship, and they can hit that magazine. So, you know, it's not a crapshoot, as it were. It's not estimated. I think it's pretty accurate. But anyway, you know, that's kind of open-ended too, but it's line of sight, and it should be 6,000 feet below the curvature of the Earth at that range. And it's not. They're saying it's flat shooting, so I don't know. that's a question. Yeah, that's a fairly recent thing that just came out. They just announced it, and they have it, you know, I've seen them before, and I knew it was a flat shooting, fairly fast projectile, but now they've streamed it down, or they've fine-tuned it down to a little missile-shaped little thing, a dart, instead of a big, flat, blunt-looking, stupid-looking projectile, you know. So, but 100 miles, you really can't. If you can't see something at 100 miles and accurately aim it and hit it, if you can't see it, is a point. So, you know, they're saying they can see it and hit it. So that's another issue. Anyway, yeah.
Okay, so Dave believes in expanding Earth. You want to tell us a little bit about that, David? Please?
Yeah. Okay, if he's muted, then. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that either. I mean.
Yeah, expanding Earth, I guess they could go either
way. I'm sorry, I was on mute again because I was moving chains.
Yeah. Figured that. Go ahead.
If you take all the continental plates, they fit together as a nice little jigsaw puzzle that forms a sphere that's about a third the current size of the planet. So, and like Australia fits up nicely in the armpit of Russia and Alaska, and then Antarctica fits up nicely against that. And it just makes this nice three-dimensional ball if you fit all those things together. And apparently over time, the planet has expanded to its current size, where we have all these gaps and oceans in it. So.
Okay, so basically, the normal theory that we're used to growing up with says that through earthquakes and land shifting and whatnot, that the continents are moving away from each other, but the Earth is staying one size. But according to expanding Earth theory, it's not staying one size. They're staying in their same positions on the globe or flat Earth or whatever. It's growing, just like we grow.
Well, yeah, even now they measure that the Pacific, on the Pacific side, that North America and China are moving apart from each other so many inches every century. But they don't like telling us that when they measure from North America to Europe, they get similar results. You know, it's not possible for both sides to be moving away from each other unless the surface that they're on is itself getting bigger.
Right. So California probably won't fall off into the ocean. It'll just probably separate like Hawaii.
It'll become its own little island. Baja will keep ripping all the way up the coastline, and you'll end up with a separate island. But, you know, how long will that take? So.
Right. We won't be around to see that.
Well, like Scripture talks about in the days of Peleg, the earth divided.
Yep.
Right.
You know?
In the days of DD&D, the earth divided again. So watch out.
That's it. Look out for the demented Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. I got to say two things on that. If you take a, not that I've done this, but it makes sense. You take a container, gardening, you know, big tub, put a tree in it. You weigh the tub with just the dirt, put the tree in, grow the tree till it weighs 200 pounds, pull the tree out, and weigh the tub. Tub weighs 200 pounds, tree weighs 200 pounds. Where does the extra stuff come from? You know,
pull it out of the atmosphere.
Water and silent. What's that? Water and sunlight, rather. What?
Yeah, pull it out of the atmosphere. Took energy from the sun.
Exactly. Yeah. I was one day. I was just I don't know what you call it, the ether. You know, the Ethernet. The Ethernet. I was downloading from the Ethernet one night. And I'm looking at the Pacific Ring, the Ring of Fire, you know, and just Dutch sense and earthquakes and all this, and you know, electric universe and energy and free energy, and then the fact that there's just things are growing, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I just looked at that. I saw Hawaii in the middle, and I'm like, oh wow. Can you say tear on the dotted line, you know, new continent coming up? So shortly after that, I mean, it was like, Hawaii stood out like a sore thumb. The volcano's going on there, and I was like, oh, wow. You know, biggest mountain on Earth, like I said earlier. A little while later, because of the work I was doing with my partner that stole my lifetime of research and fired me, quote, unquote, I interviewed a lady that was kind of a scientist. I mean, absolute, you know, cross between New Age and science, but she'd done a lot of physics research with, I mean, some major laboratories on energy and studies and physics and, you know, measuring particles and, you know, completely dead vacuum, dark room and putting energy in and, you know, it's just some really bizarre experiments. But she had been to Hawaii, and this is right after I saw that. And she says, you know, I was in Hawaii, and there's just a sense of this in the etheric realm of a new life being born, a new continent being born. And I was like, oh, crap. You know, like, oh, wow. You know, like, that's exactly what I saw, meaning in my head, you know, from just the scientific, you know, part of it and all the stuff I've been researching, the information I've been sucking in, I'm seeing tear here, rip here, ring of fire, bang, in the middle comes up a new continent, you know, and that's what I saw, and that's exactly what she said you know, verbally, word for word, you know, a new continent being born. It's a new baby. So, yeah, it could be expanding. But anyway. So.
Where did Atlantis go?
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah,
okay.
A lot of theories on that. Nothing I've run across that, you know, makes a, you know, the like I would say this is it or this is that, you know. Now, whether that's, you know, one of the major flat earthers, probably the one of the, to me, the one of the most highly respected people out there is Eric Dubay. You know, he wrote Flat Earth Conspiracy, 200 Proofs, The Earth is Not a Spinning Ball, blah, blah, blah. But his website is titled at The Atlantean Conspiracy. And he's got a lot of good information there. You know, not a bad place to start. I think he is one of the weirdest people around. But he did a song. He actually done a couple of songs. You know, he did a rap song fairly recently. I can't remember the name of it. He kind of coined a new word for it, but made a new word up, and it's in the song. But he says 10 years ago I made a commitment, bro, to take down the New World Order on my own. Here he is 10 years later in the middle of this worldwide, at the head of, you know, in the forefront, the front lines of this worldwide, you know, movement to take down NASA, to you know, expose all these space programs for what they are, you know, farces, and they're nothing but Disney, you know, science fiction, fantasy, you know, Hollywood, Hollywood, you know, the holy rod of witchcraft, you know, that's what Hollywood stands for, you know, spellcasters, those is all they are, you know, from the inception of Hollywood and Walt Disney. Walt Disney was a, what the heck was he? Can you tell me? He was a Navy or a Pentagon disinformation specialist. Well, what do you think he's doing? You know, I mean, he had some high-level military function, and he went into, you know, Walt Disney for a reason, you know. Almost every cartoon is about witchcraft and, you know, Mickey Mouse, Sorcerer's Apprentice and all that. So, anyway, I'm sorry. What did you say?
You're not talking about the founder, but the new owner, correct?
No, the founder.
No, Walt Disney. Walt Disney, yeah. Was a highly placed Mason, Freemason and you know, government, military, I think it was Navy, I can't remember. I just ran across that this week. But yeah, you know, definitely a disinformation magician. So
that might explain why he went bankrupt 9 times and he still was a success.
Yeah. You could go bankrupt 1,000 times. We'll bail you out, no problem, you're doing a good job, buddy. Yeah, yeah. Plus all the gay lesbian thing, you know, whatever they, you know, just the whole, you know, the first cartoons were like science fiction, you know. So anyway. Yeah, but he's quite a interesting, you know, mix into the, you know, part of the whole mix. So okay, you asked something though, or said something that triggered it.
Well, there's a couple things. I got a lot of things really, but I forgot most of them. Yeah, well, I'll touch on three of them real quick, or two of them real quick. One, you was talking about the government putting holographic material on the dome to further brainwash us. And the other subject I wanted to talk about was Admiral Berg, with his hollow earth theory, also said that there's a sun at the center of the earth, and life inside the earth. So I kind of wanted to touch on that a little bit more also. But we'll talk about the holographic material first.
You said on the dome, but I mean, you mean the stuff they're spraying in the air? Chemtrails.
Whichever. I mean, I don't totally understand it, but David was talking about it a month or so ago, and you were talking about it on your last podcast, and you mentioned it again today, so I wanted to touch on that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, David can jump in, but, you know, that idea...
David, I think.
What's that?
I think a different David. I think that might have been David Irish.
No, well, you was talking about spraying stuff in the air to hide things. I remember Cam. Cam, my last girlfriend, was actually talking about them putting things in the sky for holographic whatchamacallits to brainwash
us. Yeah, okay. Yeah, very feasible. You know, possibly to hide, you know, to, when I first heard that, I was like, yeah, that's crazy. I mean, what do you mean? But when this, I'll tell you what, the August Picard thing, because I questioned it with that Pastor Dean Odell, you know, and I wrote him on YouTube, and I was like, well, could he have really seen it? How high was he? And he said, hey, there weren't any chemtrails in 1931. And I'm like, oh, my word. You know, maybe he did. Maybe he did see that far. I don't know. It certainly would have been a lot clearer vision. Then somebody else recently brought up the thing about, okay, if you want to project a holograph of a, and it's interesting, here's an interesting thing. There is right now, I've seen this just on YouTube. I don't watch TV, so I can't tell you this is all playing on TV, but it's the guy, the general looking guy is the guy from Armageddon, the stupid pilot guy. the guy was kind of like a jerk, but anyway, he's the general in this commercial. It's supposedly a military United States Army commercial, recruitment commercial, to sign up for the, what is it, the Interstellar Defense Force. We were surprised in 96, but it will not happen again. We're going to be ready this time. 1996 was when Independence Day came out. The huge ships. Yeah. Well, that Independence Day 2 is coming out again this year or soon.
Okay,
whatever.
So it's a commercial, or it's a trailer for a movie. It's not a real life something
you're
doing.
Well,
it was real life, except that's why they're presenting it to us.
Say that again?
I mean, it is real life, but that's just the way they're presenting it to us.
Yeah, you're fuzzy. Okay, whatever.
Said, or it is real life, but that's the way they're presenting it to us to kind of get us ready for what they're planning next.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, you know, interesting. Now, maybe they can't put a big ship up there that big, but a holographic projection of it with some weapons, like a Rod of God type of a weapon up there coming down. I mean, I'm not saying you could have a combination of holographics and real weaponry. I mean, you the crazy weapons they've got, and you can follow up some of the newer ones, and they're like, there's some new ones I haven't even looked at yet. You know, it says like the latest thing that the Russians are going to be terrified of that we got, blah, blah, blah. You know, energy weapons, HARP, you know, what took down the Twin Towers, you know, Judy Woods thing, you know, directed energy weapons. So they've got a lot of weird things. So a 2 mile wide or a 50 mile wide holographic projection of a big ship and something comes blasting down and nobody really knows, you know, I mean, hey, they can do all kinds of weird things. You know, the Waco, Texas explosion, help me out there, that they think that was a really kind of a stupid, I mean, not a low-tech weapon. You guys know what they said that was? They use them in Iraq. I can't remember it, but anyway, you know. You can barely,
Oh,
it's a bomb.
Missiles?
Say what?
You talking about the Scud missiles, or?
No. It's a bomb.
They didn't really have it.
Anyway, the Waco thing you heard, there's a video where they play, I might think of it in a minute, but you hear it, they use them in Iraq, you hear the sound, the signature of the sound, and then the explosion, and then you hear that same exact thing at that Waco plant explosion. So I'm just saying, low-tech weaponry or some of our highest-tech weaponry combined with a holographic, you know, vision of a giant, you know, worldwide theater screen because of the chemtrails. You would cow the public in to go like, hey, we need to pull together, which back, you know, just go back into history and rethink, you know, Reagan, if we're ever, you know, invaded, we're going to have to pull together and be one big happy family. Eisenhower said it. Reagan said it. Clinton said it.
You know, what's funny is that's actually the truth.
Say what?
We need to pull together and be one big happy family, but not with them as God.
Right. Well, I'm saying that's their message, you know, with the new, it's a push for the United Nations, obviously. Not the one big happy family, but, you know, the New World Order. We now have the New World Order when we're successful, and we will be, you know,
right.
We're sitting there, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, the message has been put out over and over and over again. Obama's addressed it. Clinton addressed it at length recently, or, you know, in the last few years. You know, he's addressed it. Hillary's addressed it, you know. So anyway, yeah. So the combination of that, whatever kind of weaponry with a completely bogus, you know, ship out there, but you combine that with the possibility of, you know, from my perspective of the Nephilim, you know, fallen angels, whatever you want to call them, technology that, you know, that's where we got, according to the Book of Enoch and Esdras, not Esdras, but a Jasher and whatnot, that's where a lot of our technology and the desire and the willingness to wage war and destroy people, you know, came from the fallen angels. You know, so there is a lot of technology out there that we don't even know about. So, yeah, it's a possibility.
Waco.
Say what?
You were talking about Waco. Were you talking about David Koresh or a different Waco situation?
No, the chemtrail, JDAM. Joint Demolitions Aimed Missile? Yeah, JDAM,
oh,
that's
okay.
It. Well, chemical explosion, a chemical factory explosion or something, Waco, it was it was last year. So my point was that was a low-tech weapon. They had this big explosion, but you listen to the sound of that thing coming in Afghanistan and blowing the entire mountain, you know, there's a mountain there, and then the smoke goes away, and there's no mountain there, you know. You hear that same sound signature coming in at that Waco chemical wall or whatever it was that blew up.
Okay.
So,
yeah. I was
somebody pissed. Somebody pissed somebody off, and they you know, played with the weapon, played with their one of their toys, and you know, took it out.
Right.
So,
David Ray was talking about God rods and how the asteroids, or meteors, I'm sorry, the meteors that came down, one
sure.
Hit Russia, one was outside of the U.S., and the other one was where, outside of Australia or South America?
No, actually, both of them were outside of the U.S. One was down south of Florida, and the other one was off the California coast.
Okay.
So two hit water, and one hit an apartment building in Russia.
You talking about low points in the ocean?
I saw the one on that. Excuse me, goodness. I thought I bought oranges and I bought grapefruit, so and they're like very powerful. Anyways, I saw the one in Russia, you know, where when it hit, and you know, it didn't really do like a lot of devastation, but it did some devastation.
Well, if you were in the building, you were devastated.
Yeah. Everybody thought it was a meteor, not a God rod. But David talks about it like it was a God rod.
Yeah, I don't have any proof it was a God rod. It's just the coincidence and the fact that they report it so strangely.
Right.
It has all the earmarks of having been a God rod dropped from the sky. As a test.
Are you talking about the two Chinese explosions?
I don't know about those.
Well, they were building a new financial building, and it got
blown up.
There's
an asteroid that passed between the Earth and the Moon. And
yes.
It seems to me they took an opportunity, they took that as an opportunity to experiment with their God rod and blame it on the asteroid.
Yeah. Very, you know, could be. Yeah, where the rod of God thing is coming from, I don't know. You know, how high up does it start out? Is it you know, it's electronically fired, sabreded, just dropped by gravity. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know anything about it. I haven't ever seen anything that says much about it. Other than the idea being that it's a big, gigantic drum circular fired shotgun thing. I don't know.
Well, it's shaped roughly the same as Bill's rock bar. It's just bigger. That's all.
Yeah, and it has a thruster on it. It's just not, the thruster's just to get it started.
A god rod wouldn't have a thruster on it.
No. The stuff that
a god rod would just be dropped.
Yeah.
Okay. The stuff I saw at my home, we're talking about a half.
I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering what they're dropping it from, how high, and what gets it going, and
well,
blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Well, maybe they have little spider monkey robots that cling to the inner surface of the dome and are just hanging there, ready to drop things any place they want to.
Spider monkeys! Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I guess.
Maybe they got the spider monkeys from Hollow Earth.
Okay, I'm recovered. I didn't want to start coughing, so I put it on mute.
Oh, right.
You got me there. Yeah.
Okay,
sometimes,
so
you know, you'd be... If you're lucky I didn't have a mouthful of coffee or you would have ruined my keyboard. It'd be all your fault, you know, I think.
Yeah, we do that all the time. But no. Yeah. Okay, so the sun at the center of the earth. We were raised to believe that we had molten lava and that the earth was more like a gobstopper with all these different rings. Solid rings, some of them liquid rings, and the center of the earth is molten lava, and that's basically where our lava comes from when we have volcanic reaction. But according to Hollow Earth, there's a sun in the center of the earth, and there's life that helps sustain life. Now, you know, Admiral Byrd supposedly supports both
Byrd.
Theories.
B-Y-R-D. Byrd.
Byrd. Yeah, Admiral Byrd. Sorry, I keep calling him Berg. But
he did Berg a lot. There's a lot of icebergs out there, so
yeah.
I can get that.
So, you know, my confusion is how is he supporting both theories when both theories don't really match?
I don't know. We don't know. We won't know. You know, there's a lot of weird things out there. And, you know, like I said, as far as the volume of the Earth, you know, I would say they're not necessarily not, you're thinking they're contradictory. You know, I wouldn't say they are. I don't know about the sun thing in the middle. I mean, I've read that, and it, you know, journey to the center of the Earth, you know. Who knows? I mean, you know, like I said, what do we know and what do we not know? Okay, I've heard stories. I've heard stories that, hey, there's this big 200-foot ice wall around the earth, you know. Well, right now it's just a story. Now, I did see, this was very interesting, a debunker. This guy thought he was hot stuff, you know. There's a guy, I don't know if you listen to much stuff, very, very much, look at much stuff on Flat Earth, you'll run across Jeff Stewart. Don't ever piss him off.
Okay.
I don't know what he did in life, but he knows computers and he knows the internet, and he can find you if you make him mad, and he can mess up your life. But he has this thing called Debunking the Debunkers, and this one guy Stewart was on his YouTube channel is Lion's Ground, and part of his debunking was that he showed three high-altitude balloon shots showing curvature of the Earth. Of course, the barrel distortion of the lens or the dual pro lens is like, when you have a regular camera, you have barrel distortion. So you have, you know, it looks concave, convex, concave, convex. It kind of floats up and down, and it changes a little bit. So when it was convex, he would say, look, there's a curvature of the Earth. Well, if you balance them out and you stabilize the thing at a freeze frame, when everything looks normal and clear, it's obviously laser flat. crystal clear laser flat, you know. So, but this guy was, the three shots that he happened to pick was, if I haven't been able to go back and find the video and watch it again, and I need to. I probably have it downloaded by now, but anyway. One was from South America, one was from South Africa, and one was from Australia. So, but my point is that we need to launch, and people are doing this, I mean, daily, people all over the world are launching high-altitude balloons. They're fairly cheap to do. They're about $500, you know, for the balloon and whatever you need. I don't know what kind of camera you send up. But some of them have, you know, your data reading on the screen. They can do the screenshot of it and put it in with the video. And they do that. But your data metrics or your, you know, the altitude, wind speed, temperature, all that good stuff. But in those three videos, it was interesting that it sure looked like, and I'm looking at it on my phone, okay, so I don't have a real big screen, but it did look like there was an awful lot of white out there in the distance. But if they could launch enough balloons to verify and recover them, of course, and get the video back, that from South Africa, from South America, and from Australia, you could see an ice wall, boom, you know, you got proof. So, I mean, there's people are talking about doing drones and doing this and doing that, you know, and just, you know. Actually, there's a flat earth. I don't know. Have you run across flat earth asshole? This guy named Drake and
asshole.
Yeah. The guy is a riot. I mean, he you know, if you don't like foul language, don't listen to him. But he's crazy. He's real funny. But another guy in Germany, I think Germany, somewhere, some European guy, I4 artist, really guy with really good with digital stuff, took some of this guy's rants and put them into taking scenes out of movies and stuff. You know, NASA, last warning for NASA, or NASA's last warning is one of them, about putting this guy on a rant on screens all over London. One of them is, you know, and it's the police searching for him and busting in the door, and then it's just a recording and blah, 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 blah. But in one of them, he says this. He says, we need to go out, everybody. You know, they can't stop everybody. Rogue nations that want to go rogue from the United Nations and do something for the world, and if you can afford a submarine, aircraft, boats, you know, whatever, go south and find out what the hell's out there. You know, and that's what needs to happen. We could be wrong. You know, Antarctica might be this little continent down there. There's supposedly Antarctica races where they sail around Antarctica, you know. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, but they don't think nobody can survive going all the way to Antarctica. So
say that again?
They say that we wouldn't be able to survive Antarctica because it's so cold and desolate, so most people would be afraid to go.
Well, yeah. Well, it's just to see it. No, my point is this.
It's
you have to go to
the tip of South America.
Do what?
Repeat.
It's just a hop, skip, and a jump in the tip of South America.
That's my point. My point is you don't have to go there. I'm saying that if from South America, like David Ray says, it's not that far. But from Australia and from Africa, if you look at my point is if you look at a flat Earth map, you're not thinking a globe, okay? Okay. Whatever. It has to be more than that, you know. If you could verify that there's a nice wall all the way around, you know, you'd have some proof there. But until we can verify the size of that thing, and on some maps it's showing up as being earthquakewatch.com, Antarctica shows up on that map. I'm just saying it might be a Peters projection. It might be a Mercator projection, and maybe when you really scrunch it up into the actual shape of it, it's a globe, it becomes tinier than South America. But on the map, it has, and it looks like there's terrain listed that is visible terrain, like if they've actually seen it and from space or whatever, high-altitude plane. The landmass that shows on the map as being Antarctica is more landmass than the rest of the world put together. So there's maps showing up like that. I'm not saying that means anything right now, but, you know.
Well, there's maps that show that Greenland is bigger than North America.
Something about North America? Can you speak clearer, or are you on a Bluetooth or something? Or?
What I'm saying is there's maps that show that Greenland is bigger than North America.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the reason for that is because of the projection maps.
Right. I understand that. That's what I'm saying, you know, on a Peters or versus a Mercator versus a Flat Earth versus a, you know, whatever. Things are different. They appear differently. So, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not saying it means anything. I'm just saying it's interesting that on the EarthquakeWatch.com, I think it's EarthquakeWatch.com, it's obviously a Google Earth map, but put out as a it looks exactly like Google Earth, but rectangular, like you see it on a satellite map on a, when you're on the highway thing on your phone, you can look at Google Earth. That's what it looks like. But it does show Antarctica as being bigger than the rest of the world put together, all of it.
Okay, so like he said, we need to put together some whatevers and take a trip to find out for ourselves. So let's start a fundraiser for flat, hollow, cubed Earth expedition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Supposedly, there was a group in 2006 who did an expedition to the North Pole for an exposition on hollow Earth. I haven't heard anything about that because I'm just started really learning about it. I started learning about hollow Earth about 4 or 5 years ago, but I never really paid it much attention until now, you know. So I started doing some research on flat, hollow, and then I discovered cubed Earth, you know, just because originally I was joking about cubed Earth, but actually there's a theory out there about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so supposedly there was a detection that was done or supposed to have happened in 2006. I can't remember when.
You're fading, scribbling.
I'm not sure when this recording was made that I have talked about the expedition. But they were talking about doing an expedition in 2006 to go discover or find out, document everything on hollow Earth to see if it was true or not. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything of it yet. But, yeah, like the guy said, maybe we need to put together some expedition to find out for ourselves what's true and what's not true.
Yeah. So that'd be a major, it'd be a huge operation, and, you know, it would take some massive amount of money and some, you know, some military backing. So, I don't know. It'd be nice if it could happen. What's that?
I said, screw the military. But I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they'll blow us up if we go try to do something they don't want us to do.
Right. Well, like Jarl. If you heard of him, Andoy Jarl, a Norwegian guy, you know, he tried to go three times, you know, Norwegians for some reason like Antarctica. You know, some of his friends went down there and they disappeared, they're gone. They contacted the governments down there and the government said, well, you know, not supposed to be there anyway, and we don't investigate pleasure cruises, and so whatever happened to them, we don't really care. And we're not going to investigate it. And they're probably the ones who killed him, you know. So, who knows? But yeah, Andoy Jarl has been arrested, I don't know, at least once, I think two or three times, you know, trying to reach Antarctica. So them guys are hardcore, you know. They would like to know or like to go down there on their own, you know, unescorted. It ain't gonna happen. You know, there's too many Guardian, you know. Well, there's every country in the world is signed on to the Antarctica Treaty, and they all have their little quadrant, their little pie shape of it down to the, down to the Antarctic Circle. And although notice that with I think it, where you see the Antarctic Circle, there are absolutely no encampments or studies inside that circle. So is it inside that circle or is it outside that circle? You know, take that circle and expand it out around the Earth, and is that the ridge or the point at which the dome is? I don't know. And the other thing, too, is Antarctica is it's basically Antarctica. If you take what they show as the continent of Antarctica, it fits nicely in the Arctic Ocean. So is the shape there just kind of a play on, you know, just kind of in your face, you know, ha, ha, ha. You know, we know the truth, Antarctica. But, and here's another thing, too, is if we're living on a globe and the Earth is tilted like they say it is, blah, 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 why are the life forms so different from Antarctica to Arctica, the Arctic, and the temperate zones when you get to, let's say, 68 degrees north versus 68 degrees south or whatever, 70 degrees it is. You know, I mean, there's life all the way up to, you know, the Arctic Circle and beyond. In fact, some people posit that the reason for the giant mosquitoes and things and the weird life forms up there are coming out of the inside. I mean, when you go to Canada, I had never seen a mosquito, because I remember this. This was so weird. I wondered, how the heck does this happen? Rob Roy, Cordwood, you know, he's the Cordwood guru, Cordwood masonry guy, you know, he built Earthwood. And he's on the border of New York and Canada. Can't remember the name of the town there, but whatever. You know, doesn't make any difference. And when you're up there in Canada, you know, I mean, you could get eaten alive and carried away by the size of the mosquitoes. You know, they're like an inch, 2 inches, you know. I mean, horseflies that could eat your finger off, you know. So where do those come from, you know? And some things migrate north. Winter. They go north. They don't come south. They go north. Little critters. So that would seem to indicate a temperate climate, and they come out when the weather's decent and go back when it's cold. But they go north when they go back for the winter. So there's a little bit of a, you know, support for your hollow earth idea.
Yeah, I think David's trying to say something, but he's modulating.
The mastodon thing, though, that's one of the weirdest ones. You know, that's one thing that just, one of the odd things I've read over the years, you know, that they send expeditions up the rivers in Russia to look for mastodons and ice because they know they're probably going to be there. So I don't know. Whatever. Junior, I told you not to boom, fast posing. Baby mastodon. You know, I told you not to play in that river at this time of the year. You know, I don't know.
Right. Were you trying to say something, David?
Yeah, I was listening to him. So he's suggesting that things are migrating to the hollow earth in the wintertime.
Yeah,
that
yeah, go north. Go north for the wintertime. I just ran across that this week. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there because I just ran across that like a day or two ago. That there are birds and mosquitoes and things that when cold weather in the Arctic Circle go north to get away from it. Okay. You know, I don't know.
Right. With the hollow earth theory backs up the ice age theory where all the dinosaurs and everything were pushed to someplace else, and we don't have dinosaurs except maybe unless you count turtles and alligators, crocodiles, and things of that nature.
And our chickens are dinosaurs.
Right, but in the Hollow Earth stories and whatnot, Admiral Byrd discovered dinosaur-like creatures in Hollow Earth.
Okay.
So, you know, it could be that some of them, like the flying critters, you know, can migrate from the north center or north pole, whatever you want to call it, and to the rest of the place and then migrate back in the winter.
Yeah, yeah. Or they follow the river. Like I said, you know, the mama dinosaur says, hey, don't go. Damn it, I told you not to go in the river, you know. And when it's running the direction, you know, I don't know. I don't know how that all would work. but it could be feasible. And let me come back to or bring in another little thing, and David Ray will have to chime in here, but the guy on YouTube, it's I think Truth is Stranger Than Fiction, I believe. Well, it has a video about the tides, because I've studied tides in relation to the moon and gravity, and there's no correlation, but electromagnetism, yes. But he brings up the thing about the springs of the deep, okay? In Genesis, when it talks about the flood, it talks about, you know, God opened the windows of heaven and the springs of the deep. So his theory is, his idea is, and I think he's right, is that there's places around the world where the tides rise 40 feet and another place where they only rise 1 foot. Same time of the month, same time, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And his theory is that, you know, you have the springs of the deep that do bring in fresh water from outside of wherever, let's say the firmament, or, you know, springs of the deep. And then, so if you have this idea that all this pollution being dumped in the ocean and fresh water coming in, is there a filtration system, basically? The thing about the ponds, the lenses, the drain points of permaculture thing. You know, you got a series of ponds going down. Monks, yeah. You know, you have a drain pipe, and the water goes in the drain pipe, and it goes in the next one. It's aerating the water, and it goes down to the next pond, and that one drains out into its monk, and it's draining, it's aerating the water, so... You know, between the springs of the deep with water, fresh water coming in and this big, gigantic 100-mile-wide, 200-mile-wide, 400-mile, it's 400-miles wide, the drain, supposedly, I'm just saying this because I've seen pictures of it from outer space or from low space, from a high altitude aircraft, you know, that big drain hole up in the Arctic where water's coming in. Does sometimes water come out and that's how the mass doesn't get puked out or, you know, whatever. Is there a cosmos-sized filtration and, you know, drainage system or, you know, fresh water system? So just a thought, you know. Psalm 148:4 says, you know, praise God. Talks about the heavens. Let me pull it up real quick here. 148, verse 4. Praise ye heavens of heavens, and ye waters that be above the heavens. Why is it that you see in the Simpson cartoon show, you know, Santa throwing the ball and the, you know, the water, the dome being broken and water pouring in, and the motif in the thing in the Hunger Games, you know, she shoots the electric arrow up and the dome goes down, breaks down, and comes down around her. And, you know, you see a lot of domes being broken in movies. Under the Dome, of course, the series.
Oh, yeah, Hunger Games, right.
Yeah. In The Simpsons, there's a dome movie, a dome cartoon or whatever, you know, of a dome being put up over a city or something. So anyway, but there's a lot of them where the domes are being broken. So, but, you know, the Bible talks about, you know, the second day of creation was building the firmament. And Wernher von Braun, that's on his gravestone, you know, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth forth his handiwork, his craftsmanship, his workmanship, you know. Took a whole day to build the firmament, whatever the heck, whatever it's composed of. It says it's poured out like molten glass. It's the Hebrew, like, hammered out like a mirror finish, like a brass, as a mirror finish. And a mirror is metal and glass. You know, something you can see through, and yet, you know, one-way mirror type thing. It reflects back in, but lets light in. So, you know, is that, you know, really the truth of what's out there? You know, don't know. The spider monkeys, I don't know about.
Right.
Sorry.
David lost signal or his battery died. Cannot hear anymore.
Well, look at Truman Show. the true Mon show, you know. The light falls off. Sirius 7 or Sirius, what is it? Sirius, the light falls off and it says Sirius on it.
Oh,
you know,
Sirius
it falls
7
down
radio.
And practically hits him in the middle, falls in the, hits in the middle of the street. You know, the lighting from above falls down, the hard lighting, you know.
Oh, okay.
That's just a spider monkey dropped it, you know.
Right.
That spider monkey.
Bad llama.
Bad. But in the, okay, in the Truman, in the Truman, when he sails his boat to the outer edge, he goes up a white wall to get out. You know,
right.
Just remember that little interesting detail. All right, go ahead.
Okay, somebody else just dropped out. Let's see here. Okay, our other unknown caller. Anyways, what was I going to say? Oh, the Bible. Hollow Earth uses the Bible to back up their theories. A lot of people, you know, look to the Bible to prove this, that, or whatever. You know, like my last girlfriend, she was always looking in the Bible for proof of aliens. And, you know,
oh, yeah.
She believed.
There's a good one.
Well, yeah, because, yeah. I mean, in the beginning it says that, it says basically, let us create man in our image. Oh, God is singular, not plural. So what does that mean, you know, and things of that nature. You know, she was always looking in the Bible for proof of aliens. And she actually got me believing in some of it. But, and I don't know if that's neither here nor there. But, you know.
Oh, it is. It is. It's here, not there.
Here, not there. Right. Well, you know what I'm saying. I don't have any evidence necessarily. You know,
well, when you speak,
you gotta have faith. Everybody says you gotta have faith, you know. And well, how do you have faith when everybody's saying different things, you know? And it's like even religion alone, you know, how are we so lucky to have won the religion lottery and be born into the right religion, you know? So, I mean. How do we know?
They're all wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's wrong except for me. I know everything.
Okay. Well, no, on the whole end times thing, prophecy, if you want to call it that, you know, this has been my contention for years, and I think it's right. if you count all of the differences, let's say there's 800 different viewpoints on how things are going to play out in the end times according to the Bible. Well, 799 of them are wrong.
Right.
Maybe all 800 of them are wrong, and God is able to bring things to pass in a way that nobody has thought of and nobody could possibly think of. That's entirely possible. I mean, I'm serious. You know, I'm not joking. You know, it may circumvent in such a way or do something so different that nobody could have, you know.
So God created an earth that's not only flat, but it's also a sphere.
Could he have? Can God create a rock that's so big he can't pick it up?
Yeah,
well, that's not, again, you know, I'm not going to, say, hey, that's stupid, because there's two or three YouTube guys that are, you know, when you start talking about multiple dimensions, I'm not gonna discount that. Yes, yeah, he could, because you got that Taurus energy. You've got how many people know that what a hyperbolic funnel is, you know, that Victor Schauberger, you know. The idea came initially from a kudu horn. He, you know, built a funnel, and you've seen him 100 times, David, when you're driving truck, the little things you'd roll a coin in at Walmart and at the truck stops.
Oh, right.
And they roll around. That's the only damn thing they've been used for. That's a hyperbolic funnel.
Right.
That's the most ingenious, most awesome water energizing and purification thing that's ever been invented. And it's one of the greatest inventions in the history of the world. What do they use it for? Stealing money from little kids.
Right.
You put water in that thing, and it's spiraling counterclockwise, or whichever way it's running. Whichever way you put it in, it'll go counterclockwise or clockwise, whatever one. But when you see energy shoot down there, it's like a lightning bolt down the middle, and there's energy going clockwise and counterclockwise at the same time in a vortex. It's like a tornado.
Well,
you
let's
know,
build
I mean,
one.
It's awesome, you know.
Well, let's build
so,
one.
We should. And David Ray says, you know,
it's easy enough to make one.
So, and they've cheapened it. They used to be very complicated and difficult, but those things are made out of pretty cheap material now. They used to do them with fiberglass and polish them and take hours and, you know, probably cost, well, they used to cost about $1,000. They can't cost that now. They look pretty dang cheap. But anyway, that's an energy thing that, you know, it's hard to even conceive of, that water can go down this single solitary little 1-inch diameter tube and be spinning one way in one direction and the other way at the same time. So multiple dimensions, concave, Lord Stephen Christ. That guy is either totally cracked, you know. But concave, convex, flat, cube, you know. You got torus. The heart, the human heart is a vortex. You know, it's going one direction and then the counter, you know, clockwise and counterclockwise. The veins going one way and the arteries going the other. You know, it's a vortex energy device that generates electricity. You know, the heart puts out like 1,000 times, I don't know, 10,000 times, 1,000,000 times more electricity than the brain does. So,
right.
You know, it's got a vortex operation going there. So there's things that we don't understand, and I'm not going to say this is the way it is because there's some interesting things out there, some interesting ideas. I like to always come back to one. There's a verse in the Bible. Proverbs 25, verse 2, it says, and the same words are used for God and kings, but it says it's the glory of God. It's the glory and honor of God to conceal the matter, to hide it, to, you know, whatever, occult it. I'm not sure that's the same word there, but it's the honor and glory of kings to search it out. So, you know, the universe is here. There was a guy that knew how to do a whole lot of crap, and they basically killed him, Tesla. You know,
yeah,
I mean, the sun is a positive generator. The moon is a negative generator. The sun is a positive terminal. The moon is a negative terminal. There's free energy there. Tesla knew how to put it into operation so we can use it. We're not using it, so we get lightning bolts and tornadoes. If we use it,
right,
we would have a massive amount of negative electrons, and we would have, you know, like a dome, a protective, you know, shield around us. So anyway, my rant
right
for today. Free energy.
Free energy, yeah. Well, Tesla.
Energy is imprisoned. We need to free him.
Free the energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, I forgot what I was going to say. You got anything, David?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's all right. It'll come back to me. We got 6 people online, so if anybody wants to ask any questions or interject or anything, feel free.
Is anybody on that I invited?
Just that one guy.
Yeah, hold the peace.
Just that one dude. Holy Bible Mini. I forgot his name already. Yeah, we got a caller with the 928 area code, but I guess they wish to remain anonymous.
928? I think that's somebody from Arizona.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, one of the people I know. Maybe Donna or Jerry. Jerry, are you out there? Donna, are you out there? Jubilee, are you out there? James called and said he wasn't going to make it. James is from California.
They may have forgotten how to unmute themselves.
Well, you just said.
Oh, if they don't know how to unmute themselves, then all they got to do is press star 6 to unmute themselves.
Star 6 to unmute, guys.
Yeah. Okay, so.
I forgot to tell them that.
Yeah. I do that in my text and on the website, so but I forget to say it in the podcast. Now, okay, so we have this dome.
I use the mute on my phone, so I never think to tell people that, so sorry, my fault. Yeah. My bad. Okay, the dome.
Okay.
The
oh,
dome.
Or the dome. What do you call it again? The
firmament?
Firmament. Oh, that's
yeah.
The ring. What's the dome? Is that part of the firmament?
Yeah, I mean, you call it a dome, glass dome, ceiling, whatever, you know.
Okay.
And how thick it is, who knows? Because, see, here's one thing that's a fact. I mean, if a three-year-old kid watched a time-lapse video of the sky at night, they would go, wow, it's going around the Earth, you know. Yeah, you'd have to watch a few videos and get it to understand it, but you couldn't photograph that from a moving Earth. One being that the Earth is moving, spinning on its axis. It's going around the sun at 66,666 miles an hour. It's tilted on its axis at 66.6 degrees. And the curvature is 6.666. You know? I mean, who thought this crap up, you know? Somebody that's laughing their tail off. Okay, but anyway, the Earth is spinning. Okay, that accounts for the movement of the stars going around perfect circles. But it's also traveling around the sun at 66,666 miles an hour. And it's also the solar system, of course, the sun is moving through the galaxy at 666,666 miles an hour. You know, and the galaxy is moving through the ever-expanding universe at a rate of, something like 1.5 million or 1.5, you know, the one motion, okay, you can account for. The other three, there is no way that you could account for the stars staying in the same place, you know, night after night, season after season. They change during the seasons. But there's no way you could account for that. So, you know,
right.
The obvious thing is that the universe, and we have always thought of the universe as being huge because that's what we've been taught. I grew up believing that. Now, my odyssey, I got to just interject, you know, I believe that the Earth was the center of the universe going back to, I think, before I got married. We listened to tapes by an astronomer, James Hansen. It would take a half an hour to go through all of his credentials and accomplishments and blah, 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 projects he's done, books he's written. But, so I never could wrap my head around, as I say, you know, I couldn't wrap my head around the Earth not spinning. So I had come to the point for many, many years of understanding, you know, what did the Earth revolve around the first 3 days of creation? The sun didn't exist till the fourth day, blah, blah, blah. So we already had my family, all of us, believe in geocentricity, the normal version of geocentricity for my whole married life. My kids grew up from the time they were born believing in the geocentricity. The Earth is not moving in space. And all scientific data, every experiment that's ever been done, that's what it says. But the spinning thing I couldn't get until about 2006. And then, you know, I just saw, like, hey, there's a ping pong ball, and then outside of that, a racquetball and a tennis ball and a softball size thing, and a hard ball, and then a softball, and then a soccer ball, and then a basketball and a beach ball. And they turn one rotation. Who cares? They're all going to spin at the same time. That was what I, you know, it still didn't jive, but at least it gave me an understanding that, you know, okay, that was a picture in my mind. I could see that. Now, but in the study of, at that point in time, I came to understand electric universe model, and these guys worldwide are real scientists. They're not Disney World, NASA, spook, you know, imposter morons, okay? They're real scientists who have put out the word, this was years and years and years ago, stop scamming the world to the scientific community. You know, your jig is up, you know, we know that this is bogus, you know, In other words, the universe isn't as big as they tell us it is. So I came to that point. Now, when I hit flat Earth, I'm like, oh, okay, it makes perfect sense. You know, yeah, the universe isn't that big. The shell out there, the cosmos, whatever you want to call it, the universe, what does universe mean? It either means one word or one turning. When a midwife has a baby and it's upside down and they need to turn it, they call it, I'm going to do a version. They do a version. They turn the baby. My wife was very good at it. Okay. So they do a version. So universe is one turning. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that it's 15 billion light years big. And that all goes back to the Kabbalah and, you know, Zionism and the whole atheistic, you know, Luciferian worship of the sun, blah, 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 blah. You know, it all goes back to that. The numbers for the 15 billion light years is completely, you know, just occultic and whatnot, so. But the, so the thing about the universe turning around the Earth is really not that big of a deal. You're looking about whoever knows how many thousand miles, but, you know, you can take a sextant or a, you know, AutoCAD and determine how far away the sun is by shadows. And this guy was supposed to be working on it. I don't know if they are, but he did a triangular thing, like GPS triangulates your radio signal. They know exactly where you are with your phone or your GPS device, right? So this guy did that from Ushuaia, South America, Madrid, Spain, and Johannesburg, South Africa. And you triangulate that to the sun, and the sun is ballpark in about 3,000 miles. And that's what it looks like. Years before I ran across flat Earth, I started noticing that, hey, the sun comes up somewhere east, yeah, but north. So it comes up, you know, like here at the cabin. I'm watching. I'm taking pictures of it. That's where it comes up. That's funny. It's about where the moon comes up. And they're like today, I looked up and I went, man, I got to go get my camera because the sun is directly overhead. And the moon is, they're not in the same pathway right now because I know where the moon is going. But they're following pretty much the same arc. But they both rise, quote unquote, in the southeast, I mean the northeast, and they set in the northwest while traveling an arc. So they're both traveling a fairly similar arc. How does that happen if the moon is rotating on its axis and that's the cause of that movement? It doesn't work. You know, that something 93 million miles away travels. And there's some times and places on the Earth where it is the exact same speed and the exact same arc. Flat Earth guy took a video of a guy, in a 24-hour video from Antarctica. Hang on. And he did a trail, you know, like a star trail of the stars, and a star trail of the sun, and a star trail of the moon, and a time-lapse them. And the sun and the moon traveled in the exact same arc at the exact same speed as the stars. So how does that happen? You know, it don't happen on a ball rotating, you know, blazing through the universe, Earth, because there would be a different background. So those are things that a three-year-old can see. So one of my interests being able to articulate verbally, you know, just plainly in English, this whole thing is because of Donna, who might be listening right now, and Wanda. Wanda is 73 years old and doesn't have a computer, you know. Fabulous woman, I mean, hard worker, gardener, and just absolute one of the neatest people I've ever met in my life. But she was fascinated by this, just gripped by it. She can tell you the scriptures, and she can tell you about the lunar calendar, and I'd like to sit down in a couple of weeks and just sit down and learn from some of these people just about watching the moon. They've been watching the moon for 20 years and studying it because they follow the lunar calendar. But she said at Passover, you know, she was there at Passover, and she said, when I walked in, there was a hot and heavy discussion going on about flat Earth. But she said, Jerry, I wish that every single speaking time frame during this whole feast day, you could have been up there talking about flat Earth. But she didn't have a computer. So I'd like to be able to explain to people like that. And Donna, she has a eyesight issues and doesn't sit and watch a computer all the time and see this stuff. So I want to be able to tell those people, because Donna is just fascinated too. Just Mike and Donna, they're just grip fight. They got a big giant greenhouse down there in Arizona, and we talked, told them how to, about rocket stove and this and that, about how to help heat it, you know. But anyway, just we should be able to articulate verbally truth, you know. And
well, yeah, because people need to be able to make sense of it, and people need to be able to understand what to do with it. Like David Irish said that one day, what does it all mean, and how does it affect us?
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, what does it all mean? I mean, yeah, it's
and if we're in a terrarium or petri dish or however you want to look at it, we're inside this enclosed container, if you will. How is it that we've been able to go to the moon and we're supposedly going to Mars, which, you know, and theoretically doesn't exist according to Flat Earth. Not the moon, but Mars.
Well, there's some people, I mean, it, as a planet, maybe, whatever. And there's two categories that I like to talk about earlier. What do we know?
Right.
And what do we not know? So right now, the jury's out on a lot of things. Satellite, gravity, planets. Because I'm seeing people with their own cameras photographing the stars and the planets. And they don't look nothing like what DAF tells us. Nothing. Not even close. They're shimmering like you're seeing them through water, number one. They all like glow and winkle and change colors and stuff. They're literally twinkle, twinkle, little star. And if you put an LED light in a pool of water or a tub or a bathtub or a rain bucket or whatever the heck you want to put it in and wiggle the water and take it and video it, you can make it look exactly like what they're taking video camera of stars and planets of. I've seen Venus video of that, a lot of them. So, to me, the jury's out on that. Is that more CGI garbage? Why is it that NASA's picture of Pluto, whatever the rover they sent out, and I know Mars rover,
oh, right.
Why is that Pluto has the cartoon character Pluto on the Pluto planet and dog teeth on its butt? You know, how big of a joke is this, you know? You know, and then you see pictures of the Earth with sex written in it, you know, in the clouds. And, of course, Adobe Photoshop, really cheap edition. They don't hire very, or either the people are too lazy or they tell them, hey, do a really crappy job of this. We're going to put out a picture of the Earth because people have been wanting it for 40 years and we haven't ever given them one. So we need to put out a picture of the Earth, but do a really crappy job of it. So unless they're extremely stupid, they'll know that we're messing with them and we're selling them a bill of goods. Because you look at a photograph, quote unquote, of the Earth from space, you know, there's a pair of little perfectly identical clouds here. And over here there's two more. And over here there's two more. And over here there's two, but they're bigger. They just made them, blew them up and make it bigger. It's Adobe Photoshop. And a really crappy version of it, you know. When you take the moon. What's that?
Where's the moon? Is it inside the infirmament or is it outside the infirmament?
It says that he set the sun and the moon, that they're in the firmament. So on the near side, on the, I don't quite know. There's a guy on YouTube. There's a guy on YouTube, Crow777, who has been taking video of the moon for, I'm going to say months, probably years. I mean, the highest dollar camera, the highest dollar optics he can possibly get. He's been videoing it, and he has recorded many of these lunar waves. And he's seen things going across the moon. But the lunar wave looks like a ripple going across the moon, like a little, like you got a really still shore, and there's a ripple coming across it. Because you can see exactly what it looks like. So I don't know. There's a lot of people wondering, well, are we seeing the moon even through water? Now, here's another thing, though. And this is weird. But it also says, and I can't give the chapter and verse right now, but it says that he set the set them in the clouds, set the sun in the clouds. There's a lot of video with clouds behind the moon and clouds behind the sun. How do you explain that one? I don't know.
Right. So if the sun and the moon are inside the firmament, then that means that the Earth is bigger than the sun, where most people would say it's the reverse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the sun is very small. There should be more information on this because, it makes sense, but we are so brain-dead retarded today. I mean, I'm sorry, but we are. Hello. There's
right.
a device called David Ray, help me out here.
New World Order's trying to dumb everybody down, now they got Common Core, and who knows what's next.
Oh, yeah. We are.
I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. It's a device. It's like a sextant, and I've got a playlist on it. It's in my playlist. I'm finding it. But anyway, it's an astronomical device. I'll think of it as an astrolabe, okay? You used to, there's a manual and a description of it and blah, blah, blah. There's a guy on TED Talk. That'd be a good way to look it up. TED Talk, astrolabe, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
I've heard of that.
This guy says that there's a beautiful description of it by some guy writing to his 11-year-old son. He says, back when, as an 11-year-old, you could have built one of these and known how to operate it. Now, you're talking beyond college, university-level mathematics for us today. But
right.
this astrolabe, would predict tell you when the eclipses were and how to, where the sun is, where the moon is, and where the stars are, and where the constellations are, and all this good stuff. So, I'm just saying, people used to be not so dumb. They used to be, we say, well, back in the old days, well, before they had telescopes, they were stupid, they were stupid back then. No. Look at the Mayan calendar, look at the Egyptians, and look at the, who built the pyramids. We don't even know how they were built. We don't know when they were built. We don't know why they were built. We don't know what they did.
They were teaching advanced algebra and geometry way back in Mesopotamia when we were writing on clay.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the 12 hours of sunlight on the sundial, and you said about minutes, in India, there are sundials on a vertical wall that will tell you the minute of the day. Okay, now, how does that happen? These were made 2,000 years ago, who knows, 1,000 years ago anyway. How does that happen when the Earth is traveling through space, around the sun, and, it doesn't happen, So anyway, when you live in an astrolabe section, whatever, and triangulation, and this is just, I'm going to say this is what most people believe, and it seems to be accurate, and, we need to get the math together to check it. But the sun is apparently, I'm going to say, this is what it looks like. This is what it, it's about the same size as the moon. Gee, golly gee whiz, that's because it is the same size as the moon. And they travel in the same circuit at the same speed and a lot of times of the year, sometimes of the year. They're traveling at about the same speed. What is an eclipse? It's one of them passing in front of the other one, right? Same time of the year, same speed, a little bit faster, a little bit slower. But they're really darn close. So... they're not that far away, and that can be proven by a lot of different things. Like I said, triangulation, as I said earlier. Also, the crepuscular rays of twilight. You have the sunlight shooting through the clouds, and if you're able to say mark that one where that sunbeam's coming down on that one, and trace them back and do a triangulation on it, you can tell about how far away it is. But most people are saying that they're about 32 miles diameter. We have no proof for what they tell us. None. They've never given us any proof. 93 million miles away. Oddly enough, like I said, that distance multiplied by 2, 186 million miles, that's the diameter of the Earth's circuit around the sun. Okay, times 3.14 divided by 365 days. This is find the miles per hour. Divide that by 365 days of the year. Divide it, and don't forget leap year. divide that by 24 hours a day to find out how many miles per hour the Earth is traveling in space around the sun, and yet the North Star never moves, and the stars go around the Earth every single day, but the Earth is traveling at 66,666 miles an hour. What a coincidence. But is the Earth traveling or is the sun traveling? How big is the sun? You know, the sun has got to be that far away because it's 400 times bigger than the moon, and if it's 400 times further away, yeah, that's all malarkey. Could you even see the moon from 250,000 miles away? Just think about it. You know, that's a joke. You know, so anyway. A lot of that stuff is coming out. The Arctic sunlight, 24-hour Arctic sunlight, the recording of it, the high-speed video, time-lapse video is very telling. And there's more and more of those coming out. There's a phenomenal one by YouTuber SAR27. You get on a plane, LA, and fly into Frankfurt, Germany. And this video shows the high-speed time-lapse video and a flat Earth map, in other words, the location of the plane on the flat Earth map, the location of the sun on the flat Earth map as it's traveling during the plane flight, and a Google Earth map showing the actual plane flight from L.A. to Frankfurt, Germany. And you see the sun come up left of the plane toward the tail. I mean, you start seeing it. And it's traveling, and it's going faster than the plane, of course. And it starts getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And then it kind of goes down, and the sky almost gets completely dark. And then it starts getting brighter again. Well, what's happening is the sun's going around in an arc, traveling at about 1,000 miles an hour, because there's a 24,000-mile radius around the equator, or what, you know, whatever, about 24,000 miles it's got to travel. It's traveling about 1,000 miles an hour. Planes going about 600 miles an hour in a straight line. So the sun passes the plane, almost sets at the front, I'm going to say about at the 10 o'clock marking, almost sets, starts coming back up, crosses over the front of the plane, and it's coming up as the plane's nearing Frankfurt, Germany. So there you have two things, the sun going in a circle, planes going in a straight line, and sun is not just coming up and going down, but getting farther, smaller and smaller as it goes farther away. You would not see that from a 93 million mile away sun, no question. There's a lot of videos like that. There's one in Africa, there's one in Ecuador, where the sun starts out, let's say, 3/8 inch diameter on your screen on my phone, and goes down to about the size of a pinhead, like a needle, the kind of pin you use for sewing, for basting. I think that's what they call it. Sticking a little round pinhead through the thingy to hold the fabric onto the pattern. So pinprick. Sometimes you can't hardly even see it. It's down to the point of a ballpoint pen even, that small. Before it winks out.
Sorry, Gary, but that doesn't conform with what I've seen the sun do, so.
Well, where are you at, though? You don't have any visibility. You haven't ever been where, I'm saying this is high-speed time-lapse photography. You can't, you can't dispute it, and it's over and over and over again. You can't see it here. No, we're sitting down in between trees, or maybe you've been out on a ship, but you haven't seen it. You got to have a high-speed time-lapse video.
If anything, the sun gets larger when it gets close to the equator, when it gets close to the horizon. So,
say that again.
If anything, the sun gets larger as it gets closer to the horizon.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, we can see that here. I can see that here visually. No question.
See that on the ocean.
Huh?
You see that on the ocean.
I know. Yeah, we have atmospheric enlargement, magnification. It's not getting bigger as it sets, obviously. I mean, I've seen movies where, they're standing in Hawaii or whatever, and the sun looks like it's half of the whole visible, scene. No question. That's a magnification of, I mean, I've seen that. We've all seen that. Coming up, the moon's huge when it comes up. That's a magnification. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about dry, you know, clear air, usually from a mountaintop, from a very high mountain, and you can see that. Ecuador is very high. Totally different. And this is real video. I mean, you can't dispute it. But it's where they have thousands and thousands. Have you ever been where you have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of miles of clear visibility? So, and you can even see a curve at the tail end of that. You see these high-speed time-lapse videos, it curves as it before it winks out. So you got to be up high enough to see it, you know. So, I mean, you may not get it. No, I could say the exact same you did. You know, that doesn't agree with anything I've ever seen. No, it doesn't, obviously. Doesn't agree with anything most people have seen, but there are people recording it time after time from all over the world. So, you know, that's what you actually do see if you're in a place where you can see it and you have a camera where you video it and then put it into high-speed time-lapse photography. There's a guy, P-Brain, that has a really good thing on it. It's P-Brane on sunrise and sunset. But and he has a thing on there that's really good. It says, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then a video is worth 1,000 pictures. And if a video is worth 1,000 pictures, then a high-speed video is worth 1,000 videos. And I said, don't forget the last part. If a high-speed video is worth 1,000 videos, then an ultra-high-speed video, you know, time-lapse video is worth, you know, 1,000 time-lapse videos. So that makes all the difference in the world, and that's what they're doing with on these plane flights and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not necessarily disagreeing. You're just saying, yeah, I've never observed it. That's fine. I understand that. So, I'm not God. You're not God. We're not going to say how it all works, but I'm just saying this is coming in from everywhere around the world, literally every nation in the world, South Africa, Ecuador, you know, various places, very high altitude observatories, where the clouds are all, there's not a cloud above the camera, not a single cloud. They are probably at 29 or 20 some thousand feet observatories, and they're photographing this and putting it into high-speed time-lapse video, and that makes a big difference. You got to have the visibility to see it, and you've probably never been at the top of a mountain like the Andes or the Rockies. I don't even think the Rockies would be high enough, maybe. It just depends on the amount of visibility. So.
Last time I was on top of a mountain, was passing through Oregon. Well, actually, no, that's not true. When I left California. So.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Anyway.
Next.
Anybody else have a question? Say hi.
Hi.
Be that way.
Well, we're approaching 3 hours, so we do
not
wrap it up.
Yeah. What's that?
And my phone's at 5%, so you might lose me soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, we're at 3 hours. I'm not sure. It's going to take me to wrap it up.
Yeah, that's
my deal. So, yeah, I guess we can adjourn. We can take notes and adjourn for next time. But, yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and, you know, I could have I did get a computer, and I can have that rigged up with stuff on it so I can actually be doing a little bit more. You know, like I sent you a couple texts, but they're not going to go through until I get off the phone. So.
Right.
Like the card link with the quote and, you know, Operation High Jump and the picture of the quote from Job, you know, 38:14, this seal. Pretty neat little picture there. But all right,
you want to give everybody your phone number to your podcast if they want to call in to your podcast. You do it every Friday at 7?
Yeah, it's Fridays at 7. And it's specifically, I mean, I call it Flat Earth Friday, you know.
Flat Earth Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Podcast is solely on the flat earth.
Yeah, because we're covering a lot more. I mean, even at that, I mean, you know, a couple hours is you know, just a lot. Because there's a lot of new information. The Japan laser, the abyssal planes, you know, the Sid Darling Park said, the Australia Flat Earth map and flock and all that stuff. I mean, you know, it's just like there's so much newer information coming out and historical stuff. But, yeah, it's the phone number is 712-770. I'll wait until they come. If somebody new came in. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was probably David. I think his battery or something died. He said it was at like 5%. Yeah, when you give the number, repeat it so that if they
yeah.
need to write down, you know, type of thing.
Somebody dinged in, so yeah, I was gonna. Is that what you're saying?
That too, but I mean, you know, I typically always repeat myself when I give phone numbers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I do. Yeah,
okay.
I've done that for years. Okay, good. Yeah. This is for somebody just came on, so I was just giving out a number for a phone call, conference call, similar to this one on Friday night. It's what that?
Friday, 7 Central.
7, yeah. 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 okay. Rocky, and 5 Pacific. Flat Earth Friday. It's basically, you know, directed or to Flat Earth material. Okay. The phone number is 712-770-4010. That's 712-770-4010. Is that me? Is that echoing or what?
No, I think somebody's playing a joke.
Oh.
I hear somebody saying random numbers while you're saying your number.
Oh. Or maybe somebody is not muted or whatever, I don't know. Okay. So, and very similar to this number that we're on now, the recording number is 712-770-4019. Just change the 0 to a 9. And then the password is 925952. And my phone number for texting or, you know, if you want to, normally if you want to talk on the phone, text me and let me know or something, set up a time. Questions, information, that's fine, texting. Anyway, the password is 925952. My phone number is 417-988-0333. 417-988-0333. So, yeah, questions or something, give me a holler. I was going to say something else, but I forgot, so whatever. Oh,
yeah,
yeah. There's a, if somebody wanted, if you want to text me on the recordings on mine, I got online and I titled them all as to the main topic of the talk. Yeah, I can text that or, you know, email it to someone if they're interested. So, and to, just so you know, on the recording here for everybody listening, the numbers on mine are from 3 to 21, maybe 22. In other words, like if you call in on this, for this call we're on right now, after this call is over, the only thing you can listen to is the last call, unless you know what number to punch in. So, on my call, on that number that I just gave, if you call in, punch in the password, it says, you know, what number you want to listen to. So anywhere from 3 to 21, you're going to get a call. Some of them are the Friday calls. Some of them are things that I'm just updating. Like I do one on Darling Park. I did one on the Abyssal Plains video. That is phenomenally important. On two things because of the flat ocean beds and the Antarctica 2 mile high rim or continent, whatever you want to call it, container or continent. So, but I'll do different things like that. Read comments from YouTube sections. One is called Talks with a Troll. I don't know why it's, I don't remember. But anyway, I talk about gatekeepers. That's huge. Gatekeepers are huge and important. Jesuit Masonic gatekeepers, people that are there to keep you from going through the gate. They'll keep you entertained.
Too.
What's that?
They talk about that a lot with hollow earth also.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. In every, there are gatekeepers in every movement, everything, every, whether it's true or not, there's gatekeepers there, and they are at every level. So,
right.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, the reason you can't, I didn't realize that people can go back and listen to old podcasts through calling this phone number. I've been deleting them because I upload them to DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. And so people can go to DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com to listen to the podcasts. But, yeah, there you go. So we got how people can get a hold of you, and obviously they can find that information again by finding this podcast at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we talk about everything but Dungeons & Dragons for the most part.
I didn't understand what you said. You delete what?
Oh, at free conferencing?
Yeah.
I go and delete them after I've downloaded them. So that's probably why you couldn't listen to prior podcasts on mine, because I delete the old ones.
How come?
Well, I put them on Demented Dungeons & Dragons. I put them on my server, and I didn't know people could call in. I didn't know people could call in and listen to the old ones.
Yeah, yeah. You can go on their website. It's got a really little neat little thing there where you can type in what it's about and leave it up, and people can listen to them. Yeah.
Well,
and they're numbered.
I'll see if I can put them back up then.
Yeah, pretty cool. I thought it was awesome. I mean, now the only thing is the little thing where you put them in. It's like when you go to the bank, you know, and you type something in, but it doesn't show up when you copy and paste it, or you know, so that's kind of a pain in the butt. But some
right.
of it does. Some, I don't know. But they do send you a report every once in a while. I don't know if I can figure out how to tell them to send it to me. I could get an updated report of everything I have listed there with the title, and then I can send it out as an email. That's what I'm looking for right now. But if, I got Yahoo email. If anybody knows about a better email service, let me know, because, I mean, it's kind of a pain in the neck that they change it from what they used to do.
A lot of
anyway.
People like okay, so when they email it to you, do they tell you how many people listen to or have downloaded your podcast?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Like you should be able to get online right now. And, well, I don't, but yeah, it tells how many people and who called in and listened to something. I don't know if it says who downloaded anything. I don't know about downloading. So you're
right.
Over my head there. I am a technotard. I am a technotard. I'm trying not to be. I had to learn from David Ray, but, you know.
There you go. Well, because I'm looking at moving to iTunes, because iTunes allows, it gives a report, and it lets you know, lets your potential sponsors know who, how many downloads you've had, you know. So if you,
uh-huh.
people want to
okay.
sponsor you and give you money, whatever,
yes.
Or promote you, you know.
Since I won't jump through the hoops, the iTunes requires for you to listen to a podcast.
Ah, well, we'll just listen to Nintendo Dads.
Well, I tried, and I have to jump through too many hoops in order to get on to listen to it.
Okay. So we're not technical enough for iTunes, I guess.
Yeah, iTunes needs to download and install another piece of software. You can't download the programs directly from what I've seen.
Oh, right, because you're downloading iTunes, and then so what you're doing is you're downloading kind of like a shortcut to the audio, but you can't
that's,
actually
that's
download.
The other problem. You don't have control of what you're listening to.
Right.
So you have to eat up your bandwidth in order to listen to them.
Okay, well, to heck with iTunes, then. We'll just stay where we are. I just download them off of free conferencing and then upload them to my server. I'll just stop doing that.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of wild here for me. I was used to getting on these lunar conference calls, and I was like, you know, I just one day I just got on their website and I was like, oh, this ain't that hard. I can handle it. So I did it. You know, let me get my email address to. Like Diamonds, my last name is Diamonds with no vowels, plural and no vowels, dmnds2001@yahoo.com. That's dog Mary Nancy dog Sam at yahoo.com. And my website and book and YouTube channel are all How to Get Out of Babylon. So for anybody else just came on or came on in the meantime, just I announced that at the opening 3 hours ago. Good grief, that's a record.
We've had 1 or 2 3-hour podcasts so far.
I'm saying you beat mine.
Oh, yeah. We're long
I ain't never done. Yeah, never done. Well, you had good questions, you know.
Yeah, well, I tried to, and I did some homework because I wanted it to be logical and I wanted it to be intellectual because that's what we do. I mean,
yeah.
We poke fun and stuff because we want to have fun.
I really like
well, yeah, it livens things up, and listeners are like that, you know, don't want to fall asleep listening to our podcast. So, you know, turn up a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Ah, dang it. Right, you know, sometimes I go on for like, did I still put you to sleep? That Howard, I don't know if he's still listening, but earlier, you know, I was talking, I'm like, are you still there, Howard? Are you still there, Howard? Did I talk too long? I'm sorry. I apologize if I put you to sleep.
Here.
Now, hey, one thing he read, and I can't, I wish the heck I would have screenshot it. He read from 2 Esdras, which is in the Apocrypha, chapter 6. And maybe I was reading it wrong or reading something into it or whatever, but it seemed to indicate that before the end of time, the firmament would speak or something like that, or it would come to the fore, or it would come into play or something like that. And the whole flat earth thing is, he had a book there by a guy named Edward Hendry at Passover, Second Passover. Really good book. And the guy has a lot of stuff online that you can download for free on like the Zionist conspiracy or the Mason, whatever, I don't remember all the titles of them. Very good author, being a really good writer. But he said this, he said that in different words, the same thing I had said in my opening statement in the drop-down description section of my very first Flat Earth YouTube video, I called it a Flat Earth micro intro, that the globalist idea is the foundation for atheism because they had to come up with something to prove that there is no God. And that's what the whole Copernican revolution and whatnot, you know, worship of the sun, every one of them has a sunburst in their picture. The famous picture you see of Galileo, Copernicus, Copernicus, Isaac Newton was an occultist, alchemist an occultist, you know, every one of them have sunbursts in their things. But the, and or Masonic symbols. But the, very fascinating that this guy said the same thing I did, you know, that he, you know, that it's based on atheism and then he, that atheism was, you know, brought about evolution, theory of evolution, the origin of the species, Marxism and communism, which has resulted in the wholesale slaughter of millions upon millions upon millions of people. 40 million in Ukraine alone on forced starvation, mostly Christians. You know, you wonder why Ukrainians hate Russia. But he said this. He said the origin of the species fermented in the brain of Karl Marx for 17 long years. And the result, of course, was Das Kapital and communism. So the foundation of that, the cornerstone of that, was the sphere, Earth spinning famous through space. Man is nothing but a speck of dust, and the Earth is a backwater planet in a third-rate solar system in a, you know, a ho-humdrum galaxy that's going nowhere, and life is meaningless and existential. That is the message of this ball-spinning Earth going aimlessly through space in four different directions while the North Star never moves. So it's all, if you really think about it, water seeks its own level, the Suez Canal is 100 miles of flat water, and David Ray's gone through the Suez Canal. Great Canal of China, 1,000 miles long, flat water, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So, David Murphy.
Still only see 20 miles.
Only see 20 miles?
That's it.
Really? Well, that's good.
If you're high up on the street, you could see further, but, you know.
You can see 20 miles. That's amazing because you... You can't see 20 miles on a globe, though. You can see 20 miles on flat water. Correct. So, yeah. Awesome. Good point. Good proof of the flat Earth. All right. Hallelujah. But anyway, Dave Murphy was 40 years an atheist until he studied flat Earth, and then he knew that there's a God, that God created the world and that the Earth is flat. You know, the Bible's true because what he was seeing, in fact, in real life, hardcore science, verified good physics and verified that the Bible is true and that there is a God that created everything. The guy was an atheist for 40 long years. But one of his questions to Neil deGrasse Tyson, Tyson is, hey, you say the Earth is pear-shaped and it's a little wider at the equator, a little pudgy and a little wider below the equator, you know, all that idiotic malarkey. Why is there any land at all at the equator? Because if the Earth is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour and water would obviously go to that point to spin off, take a sponge ball, soak it with water, spin it, and take a picture of it. That's what would happen. The water would spin to the center of the ball and go out. And that's a good point.
That's
the Earth is
a shitty
supposedly
point.
An oblate spheroid because of the mass changing the continents. Well, the craton is solid rock. The cratons, the land masses are solid. The water's not. The water would, there would be no equator. There would be no land at the equator. But anyway, that's a good question. And Neil deGrasse Walt Tyson will never answer that question. I guarantee you. There is no answer. So, all right. Final statement. Sorry. I'll let you guys go.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good time.
Daniel's got his ears on.
At DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we talk about everything but Dungeons and Dragons.
All righty.
Okay.
That it?
Good night. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. Right. Good times.
Thank you.
You have a full of shit, Diamond.
What's that?
I said, good show, Jerry, full of shit, Diamond.
Who is that?
Randy Bond.
Who is that? Huh?
Bond.
Randy Bond.
I knew, I recognized the voice. Bond. Randy Bond.
I'm just saluting you. Just like you saluted Neil de, did you say Neil deGrasse Hole?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Hey, there's so many YouTubes out about that guy. That, you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean anything, does it?
Yeah. You're right. I stand corrected.
Yeah,
just it's so easy to say something you've seen about 100 times. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called gossiping.
Yep. Good point.
Sorry I missed the show.
Aww.
It'll be on the internet soon. Well, actually, I guess you can call Free Conference or go to freeconferencing.com and listen to it.
Well, I'm sorry I missed it because I know absolutely nothing about the whole flat Earth thing. I mean, zero.
We talked about flat Earth, hollow Earth, cubed Earth, expanding Earth, pear-shaped Earth.
So this doesn't have anything to do with people eating too much fast food? Because when I hear you're saying flat Earth and not fat Earth and not a pear-shaped body, oh, shitty jokes.
Hey, we know who's for those.
Now, I'm curious, though. I want to check out the whole flat Earth.
Were you the one that came in toward the end, and did you get my Friday call number? Not call me, but...
Now, I chimed in when David picked up on my little throwing in random numbers. That's when I came in.
Oh, I don't know when that was. So you did not get my number for Friday.
Your numbers.
Yeah.
Jerry,
oh, okay.
Was,
listen, I'm tired.
Talking.
I've been talking for 3 hours, and I'm quite dense.
No, I
do thank you. Actually, Randy, thank you for the reprimand, because, I mean, I've got people on here that wouldn't want to hear me say that if they're on here, and I shouldn't have, so.
Well, you know what, I think the negative thing about that is it just continues. It's a very smaller version of people hurting each other, you know, and that's what we continue to do. And, of course, the extreme version of that is we kill each other over arguments instead of having discussions, you know, and we start insulting each other, and then it digresses from there, you know.
Yeah.
Call
and
somebody else this argument anyway.
What's that?
What's that? I didn't hear you.
Calling somebody else an idiot or some other derogatory name is a fallacious argument in the first place. It doesn't prove anything logically.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it doesn't. Like, absolutely not. And it,
you call me an idiot. It's more of a, it's not about you, it's about me when we start talking trash about other people, right?
Yeah. Yep. And I got like 250 playlists and the top 25. There's a video on there that is, the guy is extremely articulate, you know, just really good presentation. But one of the first things he says is that there is absolutely no place for ad hominem arguments, you know, insults, bad language and all that good stuff. So,
ultimately what we all want is the truth. And that's what we're all seeking, really, you know, unless there are people that are trying to deceive people just for profit or whatever. But I mean, I think most of us, what we really want is the truth.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I believe we just achieved 4 hours.
Four hours, huh?
One for four? Hey, we just picked up new... We just picked up new cannon fodder, Randy Bowen. Let's go.
I'll brew some coffee. No. Let's do it.
There you go. Yeah, I got a Friday night call, and, you know, they might do this again on this one, whatever, or, you know, so...
Yeah. All right, you guys, take it easy. I'm out.
All right. Good to hear from you.
Same here, Jim.
Yeah. Party on.
Bye, Dave. Bye, Kano.
Bye.
Bye, Randy.
Bye, Bond. Randy Bond.
Bond.
All right.
Randy Bond.
Would that be 009?
Say what?
Would that be 009?
009.
Hey, my battery says it's at 0%. How long is it going to last?
Now I got to get up early and go deliver this load. So I'm going to try to upload this tonight and then go to bed. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Good talk.
Ditto. Thank you.
All right. We'll see ya.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Stop recording, I guess. Yeah.
Anybody still there? Okay. So it's just me. So yeah, basically, follow-ups, DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we talk about everything, including Dungeons and Dragons, but preferably not. And, So we're working on next week's topic. I forgot I had something I was thinking about having, but I can't remember what it was going to be now. But, you can always find us at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we'll have the phone number, the extension, and further details. And you can listen to all of our podcasts and et cetera. And, all right. Well, we'll talk to you later, and have a good week, have a good year, have a good everything. All right. Thanks. Bye.